on. And we are recording with, I don't know which one of y'all said it in the email thread, but the bald ones. And it's been in my calendar ever since. The bald ones.
The bald ones.
I literally just had it, the bald T-bone.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sounds like a Sam Peckinpah movie from 1969. Oh, no,
sadly, it sounds like all the Baldwins are dead.
I have to get coffee. Sorry to blow at the beginning, but I'm.
I don't give a shit.
At some point, I'm going to have to drop.
Yep. Tommy froze up. Me. Tommy froze up. What did you say?
I did.
Yeah. You said at some point, and then you froze.
It's still a little overcast from the tropical storm. I'm still on Starlink, so gotcha. I just said I might have to drop out here or there for a couple of minutes because the wife has to come through and feed and milk the goat and all that.
Whatever.
Stuff,
so, well, last time Dave was up in the woods, it looked like he was in Ruby Ridge, and yeah, I mean,
I already put the chickens away.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot all the weird cryptic. Yeah, right now I have a black light. It looks like so I can clean up the semen from my meeting with the bald ones. That's a text that's going to get me flagged by the FBI.
Well,
who are the bald ones? Why are the black lights? He's on the move.
In the dark.
He's in Maine
because
now.
I blew myself up this week.
You did what?
I did the stupidest Harry homeowner mistake you could make.
What'd you do?
Instead of grabbing the kerosene, I grabbed the gasoline and sprinkled it on the leaves. And
why?
Because I want to get burned, so I want to start some leaves.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah.
So I got a little toasted.
Yeah, apparently. I don't know. I guess the biggest thing right now is that they're still counting. Is it conspiratorial? Because I'm not me. I'm very prone to conspiracies. But they're still counting in Arizona and in Washington State. Is that correct?
And a lot of other congressional districts in other states. But this is how they count. One, two.
But I mean, but,
no,
but
I think they're counting so slowly. You think that Fetterman was actually counting the votes?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Broke joke. They hired Fetterman to do the counting.
Yeah. The best tweet of some guy on the internet today said, come on, Biden, Fetterman, 2024. It's a no-brainer.
Jesus Christ.
Well, the other one was they showed them talking to each other and they're just garble. So there's that meme too.
Oh man.
You'll have to run Fetterman as Fetter Woman.
They could.
And then of course there was the fact that the race was neck and neck.
Oh god. They could do Fetterman Biden 2024 and just, you know, America, but it's spelled MRI. All right, answer jokes. But
Wow, that's rough, dude. That one's really rough. I like it.
Sorry.
I appreciate that.
But so I'm trying to look at it. I'm trying to look at it less conspiratorial, and because it's like that Norm Macdonald joke that I hadn't seen until recently. Rest in peace, Norm. But it was he goes, you know, I was reading a history book earlier, and he goes, what are the odds that in every conflict the good guys have won? It says right here, and it's so I have to look at things, and I'm like, you know, I look at the 2020 election still, and I look at it as fraudulent, but then I have to go, and then I have all my other thoughts about COVID, and I think last time we talked about what was the fucking shooting in Texas?
Which one?
Correct, yeah, Uvalde. At a certain point, when you keep flipping the coin,
it was Kerry Lake Hobbs.
Yeah. At a certain point, I have to start wondering, like, what a coincidence every time I'm correct and everyone else is wrong. So, like, the little hairs on my neck are going, are these fraudulent? Are there conspiracies going on? Or, shocker, can I be incorrect? And is the country actually pretty divided down the center? Did Democrats do better than people thought? Like, is that a possibility? Because I think
I read something today by Sundance over Conservative Treehouse, and I think he put it best. It was that The Republicans were out to win votes, and the Democrats were out to win ballots. Okay. It's just that simple. That the Democrats focused on getting ballots to the door on time. Whether those ballots are fraudulent or not is irrelevant. They got ballots into the boxes, whereas the Republicans wanted to win hearts and minds. And if you're, I mean, that's just the most generous way of putting it. Let's leave aside the fact that the GOP establishment would rather lose to the Democrats than allow populists to win within their own.
I'm not so sure about that exactly. I mean, a lot of people are saying that, but I'm not sure I believe that.
No, I absolutely do. Mitch McConnell is, you know, I've always thought that about these guys. And they just keep proving themselves over and over again. Like they did not have to run the way they did. They did not have to spend the money the way they did. I think they absolutely sabotaged certain races by not putting money that they should have put towards certain things.
Yeah, I heard that too. One of the candidates who could have used some money didn't get any from him.
That was Baldock up in New Hampshire, I think, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that general.
I can't remember.
James, why do you? Because I tend to agree with you, Tom. I do think that they would. I think the Uniparty is probably even more corrupt and resilient and wide reaching than any of us even think. James,
but I'm going to get the Democrats credit here. I think they had a strong strategy, and at the same time, they also, you know, I've always believed that, you know, it's he who cheats best wins. And if you've got one side that just refuses to cheat in their own favor because they're not trying to win because of the bigger agenda, then, you know,
it's kind of like people that like criticize. Yeah, I'm from New England. I don't give a shit about sports, but by default, I guess I am a New England fan. It's like people that are like, oh, Deflategate, Spygate. I'm like, yeah, cheat. If you don't get caught, you win. You fuck. Yeah, yeah. The guys that got caught with steroids are the ones who are dumb enough to get caught. You just do it. It's not like the Japanese were like, well, we are morally against building an A-bomb. No, we built it first and we vaporized them. Like, fuck off. So I'm
not convinced that Tom's point is
point. Elaborate on that.
No, it's not a moral point.
But in the absence of a moral point, I'm not sure what that point is, other than just sheer childish vindictiveness.
And power. Like, I just don't believe that the GOP establishment works for America any more than they believe that Democrats work for America.
So to paraphrase, to couch Tom's view is, and this goes back to 2020 as well, that, you know, I read Molly Hemingway's rigged or whatever. And it was interesting. She didn't claim it was rigged. What she did is she made a great case explaining how awful the wall of pain was that Trump had to keep smacking against. I mean, she makes a good case that just the forces that were against him, forget about whether he's a narcissist. But then she also laid out the case that the election was so primed to be rigged. So she doesn't come, and she talks about the individual court cases that we heard, you know, 0 for 61, therefore shut up because, you know, none of them won in court. What are you talking about? And then you find out from the cases how screwed up the courts were, where the Wisconsin court, for example, concluded that the whole thing was done wrong. And their response was to say, don't do it again.
Right.
Yeah. So I think the Republicans and the Democrats agree that they all want to get reelected with a 97% reelection rate. That turns out to be a mutually agreed upon stance. Mm-hmm. And I think the Republicans and the Democrats agree that they got to get the populism out of there, that they got to get the MAGA guys out of there. The MAGA populists are far more dangerous than the left-wing populists. Yes. Because the left-wing populists play right into the globalist theme, and the MAGA guys are defiant.
Yeah, no, we're dealing with, they know what they're dealing with. You know, we're talking about Brexit-style populism. We're talking about Viktor Orban-style populism. They don't want that here in the United States. This is a very clear operation that's going on here. And I've been saying for a long time that I really do believe that we're going to be placed, that even no matter what happens here, that we will be placed into a Hobson's choice between either the red states effectively having to say, okay, yeah, that's enough. We don't want to be associated with you people anymore because you're nothing but a bunch of friggin' tyrannical cheaters, or if the we did get the red wave, then the blue states would all turn around and go, I can't even imagine being a part of this, the same country with these Nazis, and then virtue signaling their little tits off, and then, you know, taking their toys and going home. And the reality is that, you know, when you, you know, I know you guys have heard, because I've said, told, I think I've said it to everybody here at different, in different times when we've talked previously, that Germany uses the euro as a means by which to do internalized mercantilism within the European Union. Well, California runs the same thing on the United States based on the Fed funds rate. And that, and California gets to raise money and use that money and use the Fed funds rate, you know, as a bludgeon by which to enhance its economy at the expense of everybody else and its political power within the American government. And I think that that's the fundamental disconnect and divide here, that, you know, we're not going to be able to overcome that until there's a structural change in the way we deal with this. And I think that I think it's irreparable, honestly. I really do at this point. And I think that, you know, the younger generations have been gaslit, the millennials in particular, have been gaslit into believing that, you know, the Republicans are seriously trying to, you know, send us towards Nazi Germany. I think a lot of it has to do with their emotional fragility, that they're just triggered by any idea that we would go backwards, that any movement backwards along the progressive path would is then a tantamount to embracing Nazism, because they're too emotionally fragile to deal with. I was talking to some friends the other night at my Wednesday gaming group. All of them are young. They're all in their early 30s. Most of the guys are all gay, and the girl is a freaking feminist. And they all basically lost their minds when I said, what are you talking? I said, one of them said, I'm now in fear for my life. I honestly feel like I'm in fear for my life living in Gainesville, literally faggot town. Okay. Like they're the only place in Florida more.
This one's more, really going to work well on YouTube, I'll tell you.
In Florida than Gainesville would literally be South Beach. Okay. And he's worried for his life. I'm like, only if you like go east of night, only if you go east of go on East 5th Street over by Lincoln High School. And then you'll just be rolled because you're middle class and white, and they're going to just, you know, roll you for your money, dude. Come on. Like, this has nothing to do with the fact that you're gay.
Yeah.
Like, that has nothing to do, but they're gaslit into believing this.
Didn't Trump and I really hold think up that like
is,
a...
this emotional fragility is now, I think that that's part of the undercurrent of this election. You throw in zero friction voting through mass mail-in ballots, and all of a sudden everybody with, you know, half-formed opinion that would never vote in the past now now can get their ballot counted, and because they don't have to actually show up to vote. And I think they've just broken the entire thing mechanistically in their favor.
This brings me to a point that I just made a note about. Mm-hmm. You know, you described the emotional...
By the way, Jim, you're looking particularly homeless today. Go ahead.
No, I...
That's usually my
game. You know, I've got a 6-day growth of a beard, which you can barely see, but it doesn't help. And, you know, blown up.
I have a walk-in closet. You can come stay here if you want.
Oh, thanks. You're not, are you gay?
I don't know. You got 20
guys,
bucks?
Guys.
What? You have a problem with this? Are you a bigot Nazi?
No, I'm just pulling your chain, right now, but not dude. Your weenie.
You check your.
But your point, Jim. Okay.
Anyway, sorry, yeah, I'm trying to make a point, which now, when you raise the picture of all these pathetic, emotionally pathetic snowflakes from the younger generations, it prompts me to think that, you know, their emotional condition was formed by a certain set of peculiar conditions of the last, 5 years or so, 10 years or so. And conditions are now deteriorating pretty sharply, especially economic conditions. And so the milieu that all of these different factions are operating in and swirling around in, that's going to change tremendously. And it's going to force each faction to change its stance within that set of atmospheric economic conditions, so that for example what I'm saying implies that a certain amount of hardship is going to be setting in.
Yep.
And that hardship will be setting in for those snowflakes who are not going to have the luxury of you know, as the saying goes, living in mom's basement and, you know, living on Oreos.
Yeah.
They're going to have to probably figure out a way to make themselves useful in return for some kind of a livelihood,
yeah,
somehow, some way. And they'll learn the hard way, you know, what it means to have to join the reality-based world. So I don't see that as – I don't see those kinds of things as being permanent conditions. Now, the other thing I want to say is that before you even start talking about, you know, before you even start talking about how fair the election actually was and how rigged it was, you have to start with the fact that they can't even count the fucking votes. You know, that in itself is so disrespectful to the voters that, you know, it's a whole other category of an insult to our civic life.
Agreed, Jim. The only thing I would say, I agree with you about a lot of about those things that you just pointed out, that yes, things are going to get harder. They're all of a sudden now going to have to really be faced with this. But I want to just bring something else up about what I think in terms of when I see the millennial, the zeitgeist of the millennial, fragility, emotional fragility. Look, these kids were, you know, they grew up Y2K. They watched their parents get wiped out. Great financial crisis of 2008. They watched their parents get wiped out again. Now COVID. This is three times they've had any attempt and any chance of building a future for themselves has been taken away from them. And so I don't even blame them for being this way. Don't get me wrong. This was not a judgment.
I get that.
You know, it's really serious. And the problem now is I don't know that we have the time or the luxury to hold their hands, you know, through the five stages of grief, the Kubler-Ross five stages of grief, and get to accepting the fact that, yeah, the world sucks, but it's not the Republicans' fault.
Hmm. Yeah.
And that's the thing that they really have to get past. And I think that, I mean, and we've seen this in the past, like the whole rise of like gender fluidity and all this stuff is just, I think it's just a, you know, I don't mean to be like, I'm not trying to denigrate anybody or anything, but when people are under stress and under incredible amounts of stress and incredible amounts of anxiety that we're all feeling and we all react to it in different ways, like what always happens? There's always a rise in aberrant behavior, to however you want to define aberrant. Okay. And, you know, like it or not, homosexuality is aberrant behavior simply from a biological point of view. You're not reproducing. Okay. It's not judgment. It's just what it is.
You're not acting like a mammal.
Right. You're not acting like a mammal. You're acting like a, you know, I mean, I look, when my goats are under stress, there's an awful lot of anal rape goes on in the buck pen. It's I get it. Like, it's not normal for them to be caged up this way. And so you see aberrant behavior. Like, it's not a judgment. Okay. But it is something that we're not also not supposed to talk about. That's the part that's really dangerous to the entire society.
I like the idea of someone who's never watched this podcast gives it a click and they just hear, you know, my goats are under stress. There's a lot of anal rape, and they just exit out and go to the next one. And I've just lost somebody. I've just lost somebody forever. To go back. But I think you're right. Aberrant behavior. I mean, I guess you could say like the trauma of World War II, 85 million dead. 14 million men went, or it was 8 million went and served, 425,000 Americans killed. It ends with two A-bombs. And 20 years later, I mean, you have the 60s. It's like, yeah. It's kind of like, it's, you go from such like an Uncle Sam, women are assembling artillery shells and men are fighting on the beaches of Normandy. It almost seems like a natural thing that like, yeah, you come home and you take acid, grow your hair to your ass, and you go like frolic in mud and watch Hendrix. I kind of get it.
The kids do. The parents came home.
You guys, and you guys are selling. You guys are barnyard sex and drugs, and you know.
I don't necessarily like agree with. I mean, I look at the 2 years after my older brother took his life. Yeah, I gained 67 pounds. I grew my hair out. I was on every drug I could get my hands on. I look back at it now, and I'm like, as bad as it was, I'm like, of course I did that. How the fuck else do you internal? You just go nuts.
Yeah, no, everybody has their coping mechanisms, dude.
Sure.
Seriously. And I don't, this is not a judgment.
No, sure. I get you.
I mean, if I had judgment about homosexuals, my God, I would hate half my family.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate half my family for a different reason, but that has nothing to do with their them being homosexual.
No, you just hate them for a different reason. No, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, this,
but hey, what about the generation that's older than those snowflakes, arguably their parents' generation, who are the ones who are now coming into their power or have been into their power? And they're the ones who are actually, you know, writing the rules for all of this woke nonsense.
No, the boomers are still writing the rules. The Gen X, my generation, is notice we're being cock-blocked from actually taking power. We're going to go directly from the boomers to the millennials.
Yeah, you got
to. You're just going to get bypassed.
Gen X, and from a demographic standpoint, we're not a large enough cohort in terms of numbers to actually affect the vote totals. I mean, I could make all these mechanistic arguments as to why it was actually very easy for them to put the thumb on the scale here and there and just change the mechanism by which we vote, and then get the predicted and get the outcome that they got.
Hmm. Well, Ron DeSantis is in your generation, right?
And yes, he's the
The fact that people regard him as being so supernaturally charismatic may be that he's one of the rare figures in your generation who's managed to do that.
I agree. I'm not any good at it.
There is a low.
I don't know.
Tim, I was listening to an old Tim Dillon episode from the pandemic. And it is kind of.
What do you think, Dave? I'm just throwing stuff.
Dave, show me your hands because you haven't said a word yet. And I kind of think you're jerking off.
Well, I'm trying to get him into the conversation.
I did a podcast about 2 weeks ago where I pissed into a mug and then got distracted and took a belt out of it. So I'm just trying to keep my shit together today.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I did that. Yeah, well, part of the problem is I drink a lot of ginger ale. So there was just no visual cues to tell me that the glass I was grabbing was not ginger ale.
Well, it was in a way. It was in a way of this process.
I don't think we can just brush over that. Like, what the fuck?
Gandhi here, you know? Yeah, you know, whatever died from it. There's porn.
No, but I mean, that's a moment.
Well, that was a moment. Yeah.
I didn't tell anybody about it.
I didn't tell the host till after it was over.
Jesus Christ.
I think on top of all that, a couple things come to mind. One is, I think this is going to be the first serious economic downturn, of which I think it's going to be the most serious. I think it's going to be an absolute ass kicker. Mm-hmm. Too much fuel to be burnt off at this point. In which we've entered it not from a state of euphoria, but from a state of being pissed off. So I think when you're at the top of the market cycle, you might be heading into a Nikkei-like awfulness or worse. And to start out pissed off, I just have trouble picturing. Tom just froze up, I think.
Yeah, no, he said it. He said there's bad weather there, so it's doing this on and off.
And so I don't know what bottom you plumb socially when you start there. The second thing is on top of all this, you know, the young guys have gotten pounded, and they absolutely have. We have also, you know, corrupted their brains with some pretty screwed up ideas. So I don't think it's just a coping mechanism that they're turning to socialism. I think we taught it to them. And so
for sure.
I get accused of, no. See, I think the universities are not the source, because I think by the time they get here, they're ready to go. They're primed. So I think it starts with this innocuous, seemingly irrefutable idea that everyone should be treated well, and real simple ideas from daycare, and then you start shaping it. You start making a plot line, and next thing you know, equity and equality and various things start getting a little jumbled together. And over the next total 20 years, you're now primed. It reminds me a little bit of an analysis I read by, I think it was Crichton, about Mormonism, where on the surface it's fine, but they're too close to a precipice in which it's easy to go over. And part of it, I think, is because in Mormonism, you don't just talk to God, he talks back. And that's kind of an oddity. So in any event, I think we really have created, I don't know what generation to call it, a big wad of people who are primed to not support capitalism, primed to support socialism. And therefore, as the going gets tough, you know what they're going to turn to.
Yeah.
I don't think the other question I've been laboring
over is, wait a minute, what? Violent revolution?
well, that's the downside, but they're at least going to vote for stupid stuff that's going to nauseate anyone who believes in price discovery and, mm-hmm. you know, eat what you kill sort of thinking. The other question, that's right. You know, you get what you do, you get what you earn, right? Meritocracy. I think the other issue that we face, and it just left my head, so I'm probably not going to come back, but never mind.
Sorry, never mind.
That's okay. You know, I'm so bad now. I go to cut a piece, a sentence out of a paragraph to put it somewhere, and by the time I get there, I go, I don't remember what was in that sentence. So I don't know where to paste it. Right? I mean,
stop me before I sub-reference again. In the immortal words of Dennis Miller.
To go back to what you said, Tom, is that, you know, getting ballots out. And we've made it easy for everyone.
Oh, let me ask my question. It just came to me.
Sure.
Is there a fundamental philosophical difference between being right wing and left wing that guarantees the left will cheat and the right will do so less? Now, there's people, if you're a left wing listening to this, you're going to say, why do you think you don't cheat? Well, I'm a right winger, so maybe that's my bias. But it seems to me that the Democrats are outplaying the Republicans in part because they're playing a no holds barred game, which Tom sort of implied. And the Republicans are so it's almost a political sociopathy where the Republicans are self-constraining. They're saying, oh, we don't do that. And they'll do an awful lot of bad stuff. Anyone who thinks Republicans are going to save the day if they get in power is nuts, right? Yeah, they're psychotic. But they seem to not be able to play nose-to-nose against the Democrats on this dirty shit. Is that a philosophical?
Isn't it obvious? I mean, it's a cliche that the left is using the Saul Alinsky playbook, which is basically the ends justify the means. It's such a terrible that I'm a little embarrassed to mention it, but it seems to be true. I've wondered. I'll introduce an idea that also may get you kicked off YouTube.
I've been kicked off YouTube since last August. So I don't know what you guys are concerned about.
Anyway, as an American Jew, it really disturbs me no end that so much of this election fuckery is being conducted by American Jewish lawyers like Mark Elias and David Laufman and Michael Sussman and the whole Lawfare crew. Really, really disturbs me. I think I understand a little about where it comes from, but it's become so perverted now that it's almost unrecognizable. You know, I believe that it comes from that evolution of what happened when the European Jews moved to America, and they had to kind of give up the idea that animated Judaism for a long time about the return to Zion being the most important thing about being a Jew. And the American Jews, the Jews who came here from Europe, succeeded so wildly in America. They did so well in this wide open capitalist fantasy system that they landed in at the absolute peak of the evolution of the industrial age, you know, the early 20th century, that they had to find a new way to animate their Jewishness. And the answer was actually provided by an American rabbi, I believe he was an American rabbi, and I don't remember his name. I'm not much of a historian of my own Jewishness, but the idea was proposition in Hebrew called Tikkun Olam, Tikkun Olam, and it means in Hebrew heal the world. And from there, the American Jews go on in the 20th century with all the tremendous success that they're having in business and Hollywood and really all these great money-making endeavors. They go on to fund the civil rights movement because they recognize, especially after the end of the Second World War, that any effort to end prejudice in the world, especially after the Holocaust, will benefit the Jewish people. So they take up the cause of American Black people and this great civil rights campaign to bring, you know, justice and freedom and to Black America. And that evolves too. You know, one of the ways it evolves is that it's not particularly successful as it goes along, in the sense that they're not really able to uplift as much of the Black underclass as they hoped that they would. And that becomes a great kind of painful and shameful disappointment to the American Jewish community. And then they try to introduce all kinds of workarounds for that, like multiculturalism, which is a way of saying, well, you know, if the minority communities can't behave decently, we'll just have different standards of behavior in America and different cultures and behavior. And they did that for about 20 years or 25 years. And, you know, that brings us to the, you know, finally, the whole thing just gets so crazy that you end up with, you know, Black Lives Matter and trans sexualism and, you know, all of this extreme pathological victimization cult. And oddly enough, you know, you have this generation now of, I guess they're Gen X Jewish lawyers like Mark Elias, you know, who are putting so much energy into fucking up the electoral system. And it's really such an evil thing to do. And, you know, it grows out of that whole evolution of, you know, trying to be do-gooders and heal the world. But it's ended up being so perverse. Anyway, that's my interpretation. I don't want to hog the time here, but I'm curious about brilliant. What other guys think about that.
I think you're onto something in that, in the hubris of this, of trying to not replicate the horror of World War II. I read a description recently of the most generous way of describing Klaus Schwab as he's not a Nazi. He's the exact opposite of a Nazi. But he's going to use basically those tactics in order to get what he wants, which is to say he so fervently believes that nationalism or tribalism was the cause of World War II that he wants to do everything imaginable to stamp it out. And so now we have to have a cultureless massless society that's of pure, and kept in line, and everybody's tribal instincts kept in line through, you know, technocratic control. I think it's a mixture of those things, Jim. And then what I've talked about in the past is that when you have people who are successful, they have this terrible, and if you hear something clomping in the background, that's Graza. She needs to get milked. All I want to say is that when you think about these, you have people who have been successful, they get seduced into believing that because they've been successful, their ideas were the right ideas, and therefore they want those ideas need to then be spread and propagated. And I think that that's part of the problem here, and that tends towards the God complex. And we have, and once you have people who are in that mode and they've placed themselves there and they don't bow to any higher power, then they accept no limit on their behavior.
Yeah, there's another thing going on too, Tom, which is the fact that so many women have been inserted into the political scene that politics now is driven strictly by emotional, you know, promptings.
I heard you say that in another podcast. I could see you tiptoeing out on the thin ice going, okay, be careful, here I come.
Yeah.
No, you can say whatever you want here. I don't care.
Well, there it is, you know.
It is going to be posted.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Let me insert an alternative kind of view that's not really a different view, but rather a whole other way of looking at it. And some of you might know this book, but I read this very short, but to me, a profound book called The True Believer by Eric Hoffer.
Oh, sure.
And I hadn't read it. And for the listener's sake, even if the three of you have read it, Eric Hoffer, written 1953, talks about the origin of mass movements. And if you look around, everything's a mass movement now. Absolutely everything, whether it's MAGA, whether it's Antifa, whether it's, you know, you name it, everything's a mass movement. Politics, critical race theory. And Hoffer talks about how they start. They start with intellectuals. There's your Jew argument right there, right? Oftentimes they're intellectuals inside an academic setting. For example, there's where critical race theory comes from and modern monetary theory and crap like that. It gets grabbed by the most interesting group in the mass movement. That's what he calls the fanatics, which are the ones who really are the oxygen that give the mass movement. And these are people who don't have shit to show for their lives. He's very unflattering about it. He says, he says these are people who have no reason not to endorse change because what they've got sucks. And so they think anything would be better. And by attaching to that wagon, they feel more important because they're part of a big thing. And by attaching to a big thing, like, you know, I hate Donald Trump, they also are able to take their sense of being a miserable wretch who's lost control of their lives and blame someone else for it. So it distances themselves from them being the problem. And the really interesting part of it that caught me off guard, besides the fact that it explained everything we see today, is that he says there's almost invariably a sacrifice involved. And so if you're an ancient cleric or something, you give up all earthly belongings, you live on a platform 40 feet off the ground for 40 years, you know, that sort of thing. You flog yourself, you don't talk to anyone in the monastery. More recently, however, you decide that you shouldn't be driving a gas-powered vehicle. You decide that you should give up, you know, beef and eat worms and things like that. And that's really struck me because the sense of sacrifice, maybe that also allows them to say, and therefore the fact that I don't have shit to show is because I'm sacrificing.
Because I'm righteous.
It's because I'm righteous. And then he says, he finishes, when I don't know if it's clear of you of the rightness of this, but he says, men of action, he calls them, either show up or don't. If they don't show up, he says, often the movement ends in tragedy. And if they do show up, sometimes the movement becomes something important. And to the, he also mentions that there's serial mass movers. He even points out, he said, you know, you don't know what mass movement is going to be. What you have is this fertile field of people who are waiting for a mass movement. They just want something. Where does that take us today? Well, we are in a massively imbalanced wealth inequality problem. It's going to get worse. This will be a standing army of fanatics like we've never seen before. I have this theory that FDR kind of intuitively spotted that and said, while they were battling Trotskyites versus capitalists, the capitalists had boned it pretty badly, according to the fact they were in the middle of a depression. FDR was not just some progressive lefty. He was an insider. He knew what he was doing. And I think he said, we have got to compromise hard. We've got to go big. We got to take it to the hoop, because these bastards are going to come at us if we don't. They're going to take it away, and they're going to become a bunch of lefties, and then we're going to lose the game. And so he came in with his social programs that the right hate, but in fact might have saved capitalism.
It was a pressure release valve.
That's right. He realized that the mass movement was about to get ugly. It's an interesting view of FDR, that the right tends to hammer him from just being the bad guy.
I like FDR. I like him because when he was presented with the idea of the uranium bomb, he didn't hesitate. He just said, do it. That was badass. Sorry to interrupt, but no, I think that's okay. I think that's brilliant. No, I think that's, yeah, if you see this thing swelling up, you can't
do something.
Yeah. If you see it bubbling up, you can't just ignore it. You got to push it and then maybe put a pin in it and just guide it.
Yeah.
So how much
man is
how much was Black Lives Matter and Antifa
release valve
seriously represent that particular faction of crazies?
I wonder if it was a release valve.
Well, it also looks like it came from overseas too. So
well, yeah.
The other complicating factor is you've got people who would love yeah, the Davos crowd or whatever. I never know what to call them. But the guys who think that the United States stands between them and their goal, utopia. Because yes. we can project militarily.
The short term now it's the British crown.
That's right. That's right. And so we got to get rid of the U.S. We got to get rid of the sovereign border idea. Absolutely. We got to get rid of all this stuff. And as a consequence, anything that tears us to shreds is considered good news by that group.
Fair game.
Absolutely. No, that is the overriding thing that I see everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, the more I really look at I've been doing this a lot recently, and I ignored this for a long, long time. So maybe I'm overcorrecting for my unwillingness to indict the British Crown for their many, many crimes against America for the last 250 years. But I mean, I can make the argument now that I've been in many ways wrong about the recent unpleasantness. I mean, the Civil War. Because that was the British Crown trying to break the United States apart in the lead up to the, you know, by backing the South. And why, and part of the reason why the Crown is absolutely so angry with the Russians is because Peter the Great backed Lincoln in the Union. And the goal, of course, was to break the United States up in order to be able to eventually retake the colonies, because they were still angry at having lost them in the first place. And I've been saying a lot in almost every interview that I do that, you know, the British Crown has been trying to take the colonies back since the day after Cornwallis surrendered at Yorktown. And I think that's a very, it's a pithy way of saying the history of America. And Murray Rothbard talked about this and wrote multiple books about this problem, which is that the history of banking in America is really the history of America. And so we can trace a lot of American foreign policy and American domestic policy by the vagaries of the financial system, which was always tied back to the European colonial powers in some sincere way, obviously through, you know, trade and so many other things. And because of that, and then, you know, investment, debt, all that. Let's go back to let's take an example that continually pops into my head now when thinking about the Civil War. The Panic of 1857 was the first transcontinental or intercontinental financial crisis, right? The railroad banks in Ohio and New York all got into trouble, you know, having overinvested in just the railroad boom, and James Buchanan refused to bail the banks out. The banks came to him, and you know, they wanted help and everything else. And Buchanan said, "No, I don't have the power to do that." And he, you know, shored up the state banks with enough silver in order to keep the liquidity flowing locally, so that the local economies were fine. And he forced all the banks to shut down, and they all shut down for over a month. And the European banks did the same thing, and they tried to figure it out amongst themselves. And a whole lot of people lost a whole lot of money. And the political fallout for that was that Buchanan wasn't even nominated by his own party in 1860, and we wound up, as Tom DiLorenzo put it in the Real Lincoln, a railroad banker from Illinois versus a railroad lawyer from Illinois versus a railroad lawyer from Illinois, Douglas versus Lincoln. So no matter who lost, the bankers won. Now, which bankers? Mm-hmm. Obviously, City of London. Okay, and that was the beginning of the downfall of the. It was Lincoln destroyed the Union in order to save it from a constructionist and from a Federalist perspective, certainly. But at the same time, it was one of those classic Hobson's choices that these colonialist, you know, the globalists always put us in. And they did it then, and they're doing it to us now.
Well, how would you update that to fit into the template of our Ukrainian adventure of the moment?
It absolutely tracks that. And it's not really that. It's actually about the election fraud. Okay. It's about rubbing our noses in and setting us up for setting the United States up for, as the bad guy globally, trying to foment World War III. And guess who's standing back going, well, we're not really a part of the conflict, even though we're giving weapons to it, even though we're putting on the same sanctions that the Americans are. But it's the Americans who are leading all the foreign policy, even though it's Boris Johnson that blew up the peace deal between Ukraine and Russia back in April, even though it's the Brits who blew up Nord Stream 2, even though it's the Brits who gave the Ukrainians the help to blow up the Kerch Strait Bridge, blah, 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 blah.
But all those things the Europeans are doing are just helping them commit suicide as industrial economies.
Because you can't have a communist takeover without a toilet paper crisis and a functioning middle class. So you have to destroy the German middle class as well. Hmm. So
every major decision by a politician doesn't just look bad. It looks like it's about as bad as you could imagine.
Right.
And so it really looks premeditated.
That's vandalism.
Right. No, that's right. And so when you're looking at a potential famine and you tell your farmers not to grow food, it's just
beyond comprehension. Or you're looking at a structural shortage in diesel fuel and you want to put a price cap on Russian oil.
That's right. And that's exactly right. And it made no sense. And every decision looks like it's a decidedly wrong decision, not just misguided.
It's policy, folks. It's not incompetence. I'm like sorry. Everybody's saying that it's incompetence. And this is part of the problem that I have with a lot of the commentators in the what I would like to call the dissidents in the left. I'm talking specifically now about people like my friend Garland Nixon or Pepe Escobar or Caitlin Johnson. Caitlin Johnson, I consider a friend. I consider a soulless twat. But all of them, I think that all of them are so anti-American because they can't see, because they believe fundamentally in a kind of European communism or corporatism is better, and technocracy is better than American exceptional corporatocracy. And therefore, it's Europeans when they get, but absolutely it's not acceptable for the Americans because they just don't understand that the monetary system is just as important, and the mechanism of the monetary system is just as important as the American military. The American military is built on all this money, okay? Yeah. And it's used to shock troops by globalist powers to go around and, you know, bomb brown people and subjugate them around the world.
Yeah. Yet the monetary system appears to be out of control of the people who are supposed to control the monetary system. So how's that working?
You'll note that I keep telling you that I think that the commercial banking interests in the United States are finally saying, you know what? We're not going down this road. They have the incentive to say no to the Great Reset, to Klaus Schwab, to Europe, to the European Union, and all the rest of it. Because, again, we start getting into central bank digital currencies and all this stuff. And it just all tracks for me that at this moment in time, when we're under this kind of crisis, we're under this kind of stress, that when there's no more blood to get from us, because they can't run the system anymore and extract any more wealth from us. Well, what do the sharks have to do at this point? When there's no more chum in the water, the sharks all have to turn on each other.
Yeah.
And that's where I think we are. And that's why I can make the argument that the New York money center banks, the New York boys, and the Federal Reserve are running an operation to bankrupt Europe.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense to me. If I were Jamie Dimon, this is what I would be telling Jerome Powell to do. And, you know, because I'm not going to make any money with ESG and climate change.
No.
You can't seduce me enough with carbon credits.
Yeah.
Blowing up the pipeline was the most extraordinary move I've ever seen, I think.
Which one?
Blowing up the pipeline.
Oh, absolutely.
There's just extraordinary. I'm going, you just blew up the pipeline? I would be pissed off if I were Germany.
Yeah, and I don't understand where a guy like Olaf and I don't understand how the German public has actually said almost they haven't said boo about the thing in the last.
Well, except months. For the media doesn't let boo come out.
Yeah,
Germany's they're so fucking cucked and still so guilty.
Yes,
World War II. They're afraid. It's like what Mike Tyson said on Rogan a couple of years ago. He's like, he doesn't even talk about working out because he's afraid of activating that part of his brain again and becoming a beast. And then I think he got back into fighting. You can see
the
difference.
He did.
2 years later, he's not laughing on the podcast anymore. You see, it's the shark's eyes turning black. Right. Germany doesn't know, which is almost
kind Bruce of the shark. Bruce the shark.
Oh, that's
Bruce the shark.
Fish on Fred. Fish on Fred. Just a boy. That's what I literally, that's what I always think of. I think of Bruce smelling the blood and like, oh, that's nice. But like, that's what it is. And, you know, talking about the pressure release valve, maybe that's what we're not seeing in Germany, is they're going from we're not going to do anything to one day they're just all going to start fucking, you know, throwing down their art school applications, and it's going to be horrifying.
Well, what's funny is the last time I spoke with Alexander Mercuris over at the Duran, we talked about Germany. And he said, and Alex knows Germany far better than they think all of us combined, because he's been to Germany, he's got family in Germany, yada yada yada. And he said, Tom, if you think British media and American media is Russophobic, you've never read German media. German media makes ours look literally like RT. The German people are and no matter how Russophobic the German media is, most Germans aren't that Russophobic. They would rather not get involved in another war. They're also very conservative with their money, and they're going to be, and as you pointed out, Tommy, I think you're right in that there's a certain amount of societal guilt and racial guilt within the society that they do not want to go down that route. But look, note what the German government is doing. They're going to spend $300 billion over the next 10 years rearming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to be an expeditionary force? Do you think that's going to be an extra expeditionary force to basically be a European police force?
I think they're going to discover that they actually don't have the money. They don't have the scratch to do that.
Yeah, by April.
The Fed
by
goes April. To 6%, Jim. They don't have the money.
Yeah, but didn't stop them last time.
Well, here's a question.
They had banned wheelbarrows of worthless Reichsmarks, and then 10 years later, they had the first jet plane.
Now they won't even have those because they don't have the pulp.
That is true.
They have the trees to make the money.
That is true.
You can't burn CBDCs.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
If the American bankers have really formed an opposition to this European WEF Marxist crazy environmental nut job movement, why are they not supporting the only other American faction which is on their side, which is basically MAGA Republicans?
Well, they kind of are, Jim.
Right.
They kind of are because Wall Street's moving to Miami.
I think their schism is also in the, not that I have any expertise on this.
I think they're already ahead of us. I think they already know that this is over.
Are they going to use their money to defend those people who are really,
they're probably doing
really
it
being,
dark, they're probably doing it through dark money.
Persecuted.
Well, there's a lot going on here, but I think that this process, this is a process here. And I think what they're doing right now is I did this thing with Francis Hunt this morning. And one of the things I tried to explain, and Francis agreed with me when I put it this way, is like, look, the reason they're so pissed off with Putin over Ukraine is not because Putin invaded. It's because they had plans to invade the Donbass in the middle of March, and Putin went first.
Who's they?
Wait, we?
The NATO, Davos,
okay,
the neocons, those guys, the Brits. Like, they had their plan in place. And my dog, by the way, agrees with me. Yes,
yeah.
Kamina, go get him. That Putin went first. And he upset all their plans, and he changed their time schedule. In the same way, I think the Federal Reserve is doing the same thing. What they tried to do with Powell, I think Powell wanted to start raising.
Wait a minute, what were we going to do?
We were a massive, a big old friggin' force in on the front line. They were going to invade the Donbass. They were going to push the separatists. They were going to push right to the Russian border.
So they were amassing Azov battalion troops. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were basically going to ride the Ruskies out of the eastern provinces.
I have heard that from multiple sources that was the plan, and it was going to happen in the middle of March.
That wasn't going to be an overt U.S. operation. That was going to be
still going to be a covert. The U.S. has been giving them.
Okay,
it's been running the war in Ukraine.
I thought you were saying we were going to invade.
No, not us, but
gotcha.
Using the Ukrainian army. Which is the biggest army in all of, which is the one of the second largest. We created the second largest army and standing army in the world.
Ukraine?
In Ukraine. Like Ukraine was
how
an
big
army
is, how big?
Trained of like 400,000, 500,000 men. It wasn't small.
Boy, that's not
we
the number.
Billions in there and over the 8 years of the Minsk agreements, which were purely designed as a time-buying operation. Angela Merkel finally admitted it last fall.
So do you think
purely a time-buying operation to get Ukraine armed and trained to invade the Donbass,
so
and take back Crimea.
So we're pissed at Russia because we've been prepping our toys since 2014. We've been prepping our little playhouse.
I'm writing a whopping chunk for me. I started this process not knowing where Ukraine was on the map, so I'm starting from a dead cold start.
Right,
but I'm steel manning Putin's case since no one else is.
Oh, I am. I've been.
I know. I think we all are. I know. I've been paying attention, but for the most part, this message is not getting out, right? And I'm trying to put it together. And so I look at Putin and he looks like an incredibly rational player to me.
Yes.
I that's not to say he's not tough. As I've said many times to people, Trudeau could not run Russia. And not that he hasn't whacked people, and not, but I find him to be unbelievably direct when confronted.
Yep.
And I find him to be unbelievably use non-mitigated language.
Yeah.
And he and I look at it and I was on a Zoom call with a clergyman, believe it or not, and somehow this came up and he said, well, by definition, Putin's the raw in the wrong. And I said, well, I'm going to challenge you on that. I said, let's say I'm sitting there, you know, sort of nose to nose with some guy, and it's pretty clear this is not going to go well. Once I realize this is not going to go well, my very next move is to figure out how to make sure that I get in the first punch and the guy ends up in a coma on the floor.
Yep.
And so once Putin Putin realized he could not in any way negotiate with NATO or anyone that NATO had their hooks into, He had to move.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, he had to. I've been arguing this, and this is the same point I've been making. Like, you know, and they say that he invaded a sovereign country. I would say, I'm sorry, but
we've never done that.
Country. That's our fucking.
Ukraine hasn't been a sovereign country since the fall of the Soviet Union. Like anybody who says that is just, I mean, I don't care. I don't care about international law at this point because nobody, all those arguments just ring false with me. I've argued this with my partner Dexter White about this, and he like makes these arguments over and over again. And he and I absolutely come to loggerheads over this, and I keep I'm like, sorry, I just don't buy it. I'm not buying it. I'm just not buying it. I'm sorry. You know, if you're in his position, you're not buying it either.
Okay, now hold on a second. Hold on a second. If the if these occult financial powers in the USA, you know, Jamie Dimon and that whole gang,
blank fine.
If they are at war with Davos and the WEF and these European punks, then why aren't they going after the left in America?
They can only take on where they're in the domain where they're strong.
Do we know who all the financiers who helped Elon Musk are? Because he had a lot of financiers that helped him. Maybe that was their first overt punch.
Remember, you fight in the domains where you're strong, right? Their strength is in, they have control ultimately what they've been setting up, I think, for years now, the opportunity to decouple American capital markets from European capital markets. And I've made this argument for close to a year now about the implementation of SOFR is the means by which the United States banking system can stay decoupled from the European banking system. Because we're not indexed, our debt's not indexed to LIBOR anymore. So they can't use LIBOR as a whip in order to force the Fed to pivot by creating the same amount of stress they're under and recreating that stress over here. Okay.
So your model, by the way, is really important because in the debate going on of when Powell's going to pivot, I think your model says Powell's going to ream him.
Yes. So I think Powell goes to 6%. Saying all year, Powell's going to go to 6%.
Well, I have too, but I hadn't thought in terms of a geopolitical hammer job. I thought he would not pivot because he realized it was game day and he had to deal with inflation. You're saying he's not going to pivot because he wants to bring Europe to its knees.
Absolutely.
Okay. Right. That's an interesting model.
I've been saying explicitly, and Daniel DiMartino Boots said this in the Hedgeye interview she did. On the 13th of October, she said explicitly the same thing that I've been saying. The Fed is not raising interest rates to combat inflation.
Right. She wants to break the Putin put, for starters.
She wants to, you kill the Fed put and you do a controlled demolition of the leveraged loan market. And the leveraged loan market is the offshore leveraged loan market, which is otherwise known as the leveraged offshore dollar market. Who controls that market? King Charles, Frankfurt, Milan, Amsterdam, come on, let's do the math. All the old colonial powers, their money is all tied up in they made a fortune levering up zero cost offshore dollars. The European banking system is uniquely vulnerable to a rate shock, which is why Lagarde had to do the TPI, the toilet paper initiative. I mean, the transmission protection instrument. It's true, turn the euro into toilet paper. But what is why she has to maintain credit spreads internally within the EU, and her only option then is to crush the euro. If you're going to maintain credit spreads, then you have to crush the euro in the process. And that's why the euro hit 95 cents earlier in the year. Yeah, we got to bounce back to $1.03. I don't know about anybody else, but if you're not short in the euro at $1.03, like you're not playing the game, because it's clearly overvalued, because Powell's going to raise another 75 basis points in December.
So, hey, just a second. So what's the consequence of that move? Because Europe is already going medieval. Okay. So they're not in a very strong position in any way.
No, they're not.
But the U.S. economy is cracking up too. So where does that leave both the U.S. and Europe?
It's going to be we're both coming down, but they're going to come down more. And everybody's focused on Europe not having enough gas to get through this winter. That's not the problem. They have enough gas to get through the winter. It'll be tough. They'll get through it. How are they going to get through next winter?
Yeah, I've heard that from several people. The delay surprises me.
Well,
the
by
other
the way,
thing is
the medieval
Russia...
the medieval period was more than 1 year.
I hear it's
no,
like
no, what I mean
four
is,
or 500.
What I mean is, Jim, is that why these midterm elections bothered me so much is that we had the opportunity to send a message and to get control of the Congress to slow this road to hell. And actually to start the turn, right? Unfortunately, as we talked about at the beginning of this show, the mechanisms in place are such that they have a mechanistic control over the election system. And so now the Fed is in real trouble. Now they're going to come under, you think the Fed's been under pressure now. You just wait for 3 weeks from now, or a month from now, or 2 months from now, because as the economy turns down, the pressure on the Fed to stop raising rates is going to be immense. But what they have to do is they have to come at it from the fiscal side. They have to force the Fed to pivot. How do you force the Fed to pivot? You force the Fed to pivot by forcing them to monetize $6 trillion worth of unnecessary spending. That's what Build Back Better was about. Why that failure? So you want to know why? You ask the question as to why I firmly think that last year, Diamond and company were all behind Manchin and Sinema saying no to Build Back Better, no to the infrastructure bill, no to any of that. That was all basically UBI. All right. When you look at the bill, the smaller versions of those bills that were passed, they're all kind of classical stimulus. Well, if the states ask for that money, there'll be a slush fund that we can then print the money to do it. But if they don't ask for the money, then it's not going to be, then the spending won't happen. So it's tax breaks, it's tax incentives, it's indirect stimulus. It's not direct injection of money into the supply, which the Treasury will have to issue debt for, which the Fed will have to monetize because there's no appetite for it overseas, right? That means the Fed, that's how you force the Fed into a pivot. We're not, and so between SOFR and the lack of fiscal spending coming from Congress, so if they steal the House, guys, and they steal the Senate, expect they're going to push everything through. And the only thing that stops that, I hate to say this, is an armed insurrection on the Capitol and just taking them all out and putting them in jail.
I'm waiting for January 6th for that.
I mean, for the record, I'm looking at the board, and as I look at the board that way, and you guys all know that that's what I, that's the way I look at all this stuff. To me, this is all just a big game of like friggin' imperial or diplomacy or whatever. That's the way I look at it. I'm like, okay, well, these are the strategic moves you have to make.
I got to say that
players at the table.
For the legal record, my podcast can't endorse that. Just for the legal record,
what's that?
The armed insurrection.
I don't. I don't recommend
it. I know you don't. I know you don't. But
I mean, I'm not. I never. Either that, or we just have to accept the fact that it's going to have to. That we're on the path to a political dissolution of the United States, which also falls into
which will inevitably lead
plays
to
into their hands. Because what happens to the $31 trillion worth of sovereign debt? See, the whole point here is to try and keep this contained in Europe so that the capital that's left in Europe doesn't leave Europe. What they don't want to see is a mass exodus of what capital is left in Europe out. They're desperately trying to hold.
Who's they? Who's they? You keep saying that,
Davos.
But I'm not sure which.
Davos, okay. The old European colonial powers.
Right.
So the British crown,
got it.
The European Union.
I needed to know, need to make sure I wasn't on the wrong team.
Yeah. So everything we're seeing from the from a headline point of view is how can we make the United States look more and more and more dysfunctional? Because capital freezes when it comes to uncertainty. The political uncertainty surrounding the Trump presidency. What happened? The dollar was really weak during the Trump presidency. Why? It had nothing to do with COVID. Had nothing to do with anything else. It had everything to do with just constantly hounding that Trump was not in control of his own government. And that kept the dollar weak. And Europe kept saying, we're inevitable, we're doing this, we're making these moves. The ECB was very tight with their monetary policy, relatively speaking, blah, 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 blah. No fiscal stimulus.
It seems to me that if your scenario plays out and the party of chaos, as I like to call them, succeeds in stealing the election, I see quite a violent reaction to that itself. I don't think you'll have to wait until, the new Democratic, Democratic Congress is sworn in and they start to jam every possible piece of legislation through. I think that winter will be a winter.
I come down on the side of I don't want DeSantis to run in 2024. I don't want him going to Washington. They'll eat him alive.
Right. I think the vote count delay could be the equivalent of 14 days to flatten the curve. and the problem is that by the time they take the House and the Senate, people will be worried about the next whatever.
Right.
And in fact, that's my theory as to why they leaked the Supreme Court story out.
Sure.
Was it gave people a chance to burn off steam while it was still a theoretical construct.
The thing I'm worried about is an escalation of the war in Ukraine. That war spending is going to be the way that they neuter the Fed.
I don't think the American people want to do that at all.
But
I'm not sure we have a say, though. I know we don't have a say.
That's the problem.
I'm not sure about that.
I'd like to be wrong, but my inner cynic at this point says they're going to try regardless.
I think it would be a really reckless move at this point.
The other thing that troubles
me. I know this is like a Chinese finger trap for them. The more they try to wriggle out of the trap that they've set for themselves, the worse it gets. But they're psychopaths, and psychopaths double down until they are beaten down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem.
I'll be right back.
Keep talking.
It seems like garishness is part of the story to me. It seems like it's not just to win. Like, for example, when they beat down the truckers, they didn't need to just get the truckers to go away. They had to completely bitch slap them.
Yes.
And they had to show that you cannot win this battle. You cannot, Joe Sixpack cannot win going, especially because there's truckers in every country. So you could have a global spring real fast.
They almost
if the truckers had won that. The American truckers, by the way, having been beaten down by January 6th, were not going to rally. They smelled a trap and they said, we're not going there. But, everything looks to me like it's intended to be so garish that they're flaunting it. And I don't think it's just arrogance. I think it's a strategic decision to say, look, you are helpless, right? They're waterboarding us.
Mm.
Yes. Yes, Dave. Absolutely. They're rubbing our noses in it.
So I'm reading a book called Chaos, and it's about the Charles Manson murders. And it's not an easy read because it's too long for the ultimately the punchline, but it's a very good book. But I'm doing an audiobook. Manson, it really does appear, I'm almost done. It appears the Manson family were absolutely CIA driven the whole way. And it gets to the question. Oh, yeah, the Manson family. Oh, the story is an amazing story. So if you dig deep under the surface, it turns out everything about the Manson story falls apart. They did the killing, but these guys were tied to a PSYOP clinic in Haight-Ashbury where a whole bunch of CIA guys were running studies on what psychedelics do to people and can you change people's thought processes. And the guy does an excellent job of making it sound like it's legit. I mean, he really doesn't go over the top. He doesn't throw shit around. He talks about the frustration trying to get information, which makes the book too long. But it really does look like a game of trying to manipulate people's thinking on a wholesale level. And in fact, the guys running the Haight-Ashbury clinic where Manson was going routinely, the guy was actually part of the MK Ultra program at Harvard. Mm. And so the whole thing connects. And then you realize that was actually one of the first mass killings. Right. That was an early one. And then after that, you get other things and you get I was asked on a panel discussion. They said, I'll tell you what we want you to do. They gave me 10 minutes warning. I want you to present a conspiracy without defending it. And let the audience ask questions. So there were three of us. And the conspiracy I threw out is that the mass shootings, many, if not most, are sovereign state driven. And I actually think they are young kids who are being brainwashed into doing this. This book has left me more convinced than ever because it's right on the money. I mean, it's right on the money. And so that's why I wonder about their garishness if they're not applying this brainwashing thinking on just colossal scales, like the vaccine. They don't seem to care that they've been caught dead to rights, that the vaccine's shit, and they're still pushing it on kids. And I go, how is that possible?
Yeah.
How is it possible they don't back away? And Brett Weinstein said the most amazing thing to him was that when it became clear, they just doubled down. Yeah. And he said that was the thing that bothered him the most. And that might not be because of greed or just sociopathy. It may be a tactically important part of the game.
To never question.
No question. I think.
What do you guys think? I had on Dr. McCullough 2 days ago. He was talking about what?
He's gone dark. He went from being a doctor to a conspiracy theorist in a wholesale way.
I love Dr. McCullough. He's my
friend. I know, but all the anti-vaxxers, the serious anti-vaxxers, have all gone total deep state dark.
Explain to I missed what you're describing. I haven't checked in with Dr. McCullough.
There's been something. It's coming out. It's called the DARPA Adept Program.
Oh yeah, I saw a headline. I didn't read it.
And it's ADEPT came out. ADEPT came out in 2012, and it seems that like the entire vaccine rollout was. And I haven't looked enough into it. The entire vaccine rollout was a DOD program that started in 2012, and it's been rolled out under the facade of Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Johnson & Johnson. I don't know what that means. I don't know what the implications of that are. But it's seeming like this whole thing is a DOD program. I don't know.
There's 36 bio labs in Ukraine. It's hard not to be
a conspiracy. In Dr. McCullough's defense,
right.
How do you not be a conspiracy? You're like, all right.
You look at the Clinton Foundation, you say, who's the biggest donor? And it turns out it's Ukraine. Ukraine is the Clinton Foundation's biggest donor.
It can't not be a conspiracy. In 1973, when they released publicly the Zapruder film for the first time, and you see his head go back into the left, He can't not go, huh? That's
yeah,
funny.
But that one you can shake off for a long time ago. But like, for example, in this book, Chaos, but the Mansons, what he has discovered is he found troves of MK Ultra files. They thought they had destroyed them all. They tried, and I thought, you know, I guess this conspiracy theory is probably true. Apparently, in the 70s, this thing got headline press nonstop.
Yeah, that's
why. So this thing really was true. Well, but they didn't. They left 16,000 papers in a warehouse by mistake.
Yeah, they.
And what he's finding in these 16,000 is what the feds gave to the church commission.
Yeah,
was bullshit.
Yeah,
there, it doesn't match up with the church commission who investigated this crap. They fed him crap.
Yeah,
dude. And this never stopped. If the CIA or the FBI, for that matter, became good guys, tell me what year that happened.
The Poisoner in Chief by, I think, Stephen Kinzer. I think that's his name.
I like Kinzer. I've read a number of his books.
Dude, read Poisoner in Chief about Sidney Gottlieb. During Vietnam, we were taking Viet Cong and putting electrodes in their brain and trying to, like, control them like remote control cars. That was in the late 60s. Dude, it gets to a point where if you're not a conspiracy theorist, that is crazier. If you accept the world as it is at face value, it is harder to, it is more wild to believe that. And I'm not saying you have to believe everything, because then you fall down a rabbit hole thinking the earth is hollow and there's dinosaurs inside of it. Like, you know, you can't go full, but I mean, there's more reason to be a conspiracy theorist than there is not.
Well, the bottom line of that seems to be that the U.S. government is at war with the American people and has been for a long time.
Yeah,
I don't know that I actually believe that, but it seems that way.
At war with their people.
Yeah.
Say that again, Tom.
I think that's right.
The major governments have been at war with their people. I don't think it's just the Americans.
Yeah,
this is the point I want to remind everybody.
Yeah,
everybody.
More people
we're all victims here.
Yeah. There's a reason
I have to go, and I apologize, but I've got an obligation. So.
Seems pretty guilty as soon as we bring up MKUltra.
Yeah, I know.
Who do you
it's
know?
Interesting
who's your
as
handle?
Hell. I'm sorry to do it.
Yeoman's work tonight. He went out on the edge about
chicks and Jews. Chicks and Jews. Yeah. How do you go? How do you get edgier?
But
than
I'm
that?
A Jew. I can do that.
That is, yeah, I know.
I'm not a chick, however.
I'm only Italian.
Are you sure?
I'm only Jewish.
People are going to start accusing you of being like my Uncle Tom. Like, Tommy never says anything, but he brings on Jim, and then he goes out on all the Jewish conspiracy.
Yeah,
it wasn't a conspiracy theory. It was.
I'm kidding. No, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was a brilliant breakdown.
Absolutely. Right. And Jim, it was good to see you as always. And one of these days, we got to get hooked up again and do another podcast together.
You bet.
So go choke the chickens.
You too. Yeah, I'm not going to choke that chicken. But nice to see all of you again. So,
yeah, buddy. You too. And
be well, absolutely. Jim. Take care. Thank
you. Take care, man. Yeah. But yeah, no. I mean, in Dr. McCullough's defense, well, one, I just like him. He's my friend. But I mean, it's hard not to be. I just read. It's not coming out for a couple of days, but I got to read earlier this month Dr. Malone's new book. He sent it to me. Lies My Government Told Me. Yeah, no, it's you're not incorrect in that all these doctors have seemingly gone down the rabbit hole. But what else? Just like the kids of the Greatest Generation, you know, take acid and go frolic in Woodstock. It's like, yeah, just like I was on a ton of drugs after my brother died. It's like, yeah, it's what else do you do? Your brain fractures. Yeah, you can't. When you're at the apex of your field, Dr. McCullough, the most published cardiorenal physician in the world, Dr. Malone, who holds 9 patents for the mRNA vaccine, when you see this shit get so demonically twisted and co-opted, the next rational step is you then have to re-examine the whole world.
Well, the shock to these guys, I'm in a doc Zoom group that has had McCullen and Malone and all these guys in it, Brian Cole, they come and go. We've got an NSA guy. The shock to these guys, including my doc Zoom group in its entirety, is that for many, it's their first rabbit hole. So they're cruising along. They're a doctor. They think they're doing normal stuff. And something drags them down the rabbit hole. And next thing you know, you're going, okay, now I got to rethink 9/11. Now I got to rethink the Gulf of Tonkin. I got to rethink USS Liberty. I got to rethink, you know, Pearl Harbor. I've got, you know, you just go on and on and on. And once you've gone down one of these rabbit holes, it's virtually impossible to back out and say, but the rest of the world is normal.
Right.
But
let me just, before you say anything, one thing I do want to, point out here is that we live in a world of overlapping psyops, and we live in a world of not just misinformation and disinformation, but malinformation. We are now at the level where they seed bad information into the zeitgeist on purpose, certainly, and they're using, they absolutely use slash poll for this, 4chan, in order to get you to go down the worst, the wrong rabbit holes, and then which they can then easily be debunked and taken apart in order to marginalize you. It's very important to keep, to try and keep everything in perspective. This is the hardest part. It's like, I liken what you're, what you guys are saying about McCullough and Malone and others. It's that moment, like we libertarians, when we have that moment of spiritual awakening, we realize, oh, now I know why I hate politics. It's because I'm a libertarian. And then you become suffused with all this energy and anima that you want to, and you don't know what else to do with all that energy as you go through this mimetic collapse of what you thought how you thought the world worked. And then you have to channel that. And that's that first 6 months to 2 years. That's the hardest part.
It's a euphoria. It's the euphoria of it all. Euphoria.
Yes, it's a dark euphoria. It's a very good way of putting it there. Thank you.
But you can't. You're right. You can't lose. You can't
lose your perspective.
Because as much as I read about all this shit and interview these guys, you're right. Because just like once you see one conspiracy, you then have to question the rest of the world.
Right.
The malinformation is it's evil, but it's brilliant. All you got to do is put out a couple easily debunkable ones, and then you go, well, if those were debunked, they're all debunked, and that's you have to not do. It is. It's very
difficult to do that.
You can't go down.
This is part
of the reason why I kind of tried to say at the 40,000 foot global macro level and identify the incentives.
Yes.
And then just plant seeds and let people figure out what they're going to do with it.
You can't go all the way down. You go, JFK was probably whacked by nefarious forces. It's because he knew about UFOs. It's like, no.
Could have been the Russians. Could have been this one. Could have been that one. Guys.
So let me chime in on that one. A financial Twitter guy who I'd love to name because he's prominent. I can't name him because he told me over the phone.
Kanye West.
But he's a very, his previous history is a very prominent guy. And he's under a pseudonym, but he said he went down the JFK rabbit hole years ago, and he said he read probably 190 of the 200 books on JFK. His conclusion was that they are probably mostly intended to deceive, and that they are intended to make it impossible, not just hard, impossible to actually put the story together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're facing is this problem is that it's not just misinformation, it's malinformation. It's throwing the tennis ball for your dog. Yeah. And it's to drive you batshit.
Absolutely.
And then here's the other thing I worry about. I worry about that someone who's intellectually strong can build a knowledge base that's sufficiently good that now you've got this superstructure that you can hang almost any fact off of successfully. And it could cause you to miss the fact that it's the wrong superstructure.
Yes. Yes.
But we all
that
face
is exactly it. What I'm talking about, Dave.
No, that's
right. But we're all at risk of this too.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, no, absolutely. We're fucked.
This is why.
So as you talk about the Davos guys and stuff, I hear it. There's great logic. There's great predictive value, which means when I see something happen in the future, I go, oh, my God, Luongo said that. Right. That'll be interesting. But I also hear guys who know so much about that shit that the fact required to knock you off that model would have to be so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Once
know,
it becomes this annealed system.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And the NSA guy in my Zoom group said something profound. I might have said this before, but he said one thing, and I translated it to another thing. He said he doesn't like to name names of bad guys because then you get to wash your hands of thinking. You say, oh, Bill Gates is the reason we have a COVID problem. Then you say, okay, my work here is done. What's for dinner, right?
Yeah.
Right. He said, so don't conclude things like that because you'll stop thinking. I realize the other thing you should never do is declare someone as stupid. Now, it's so hard to not claim someone stupid. But by saying that, you then get to say, therefore, what they say is not relevant.
Yes. Well, not only that, but you remove their guilt.
George Friedman said it in his book, America's Secret War, which, by the way, if there's a PSYOP guy out there, George Friedman is it. He said, never underestimate any of the players. No matter who they are, they are smart and they are savvy and they are tactical. Just because they live in a goddamn mud hut in Afghanistan doesn't mean they're not, you know, balls to the wall, clever.
No,
that's exactly right. I say that all the time. I also say that. I say I never underestimate anybody. I assume everybody is competent. And it's part of the reason why I don't like to spend a lot of time. I always say, yeah, it could be incompetence, but it's more likely malice. Malice is the thing you should really be worried about.
Which is exactly the opposite of what we're told to do by that never chunk. There's a name for that. What's the name for that rule? There's a name for that law.
There's a law. Don't attribute to malice what can be attributed to incompetence.
That undoubtedly was created by the malicious guys.
That was probably the CIA. Yeah. Well, the term conspiracy theorists came from the CIA, like 1967. I like a broken record. I repeat this on the podcast when people are like, Biden's stupid, Trump's an idiot. I'm like, these people are evil. By calling them stupid is like, can you believe Muhammad, you are
taking their agency away from them, and you should not do that.
Well, you're taking away responsibility. You're going, did you know Muhammad Atta? What an idiot. He couldn't even land a plane. He flew it into the World Trade Center. It wasn't an accident, retard. Did you know Lee Harvey was cleaning his gun on November? No, you fucking dipshit. It's
right.
Biden's not an idiot. He drained the SPR for a reason.
Yes.
And
it wasn't just to get likely him either. Right.
Well, I'm sorry, Biden is both evil. I did that wrong. I didn't put Biden in quotation marks.
Yeah.
Right. I won't even put
I won't even type the word Biden without putting it in quotation.
Just so everybody knows that I don't believe he's... Whatever.
Team Biden, right? It's like when I say the left, my wife gets mad. When I say the left, my wife gets mad. And I say, don't make me put an adjective every time. When I say the left, I'm talking about the douchebags way over there.
It's the presidential placeholder for these groups.
He's evil, but he doesn't have the capacity to be calling the shots. That's the problem.
He's not calling the shots.
Biden is every bit... Right, but he's every bit evil enough to be that guy, but he's not that guy now.
Not anymore.
And then he's talking about a run for president. Is there any chance he's running for president again?
I don't think the left will allow it.
I don't see
how he's going to be drooling profusely. You know, he won't be able to put together even
my bigger worry, Dave, is that he still has the keys to the football. Because as dementia sets in, the random outburst of belligerence happened.
The guys around the world who are important have to know that his utterances are not relevant. They have to know that.
Well, the precedent's also been set.
Of course they do.
The precedent's also been set. I talk about it all the time. It's one of my favorite, if not my favorite book, Raven Rock by Garrett Graff, about continuity of government, the nuclear bunker system from FDR through Obama. The precedent's been set. Where Kissinger and I don't remember who the last secretary or who the Secretary of Defense was under Nixon. I always fucking forget.
McNamara.
No, that was Kennedy, right?
Well, McNamara was
under several administrations.
Well, it depends on what part of the administration.
End of Nixon, whoever that was. Maybe it was whatever the fuck. Kissinger talked to him, and they actually
Rumsfeld?
No, that was later.
Okay.
We'll say it's McNamara. Kissinger talked to McNamara, and they actually usurped president because Nixon had said that nuclear football will be with me until the moment that Ford sworn in. That was not true. Kissinger talked to the SecDef, and they had the nuclear football kept off the plane when he was flown home because he was no longer he lost the presidency in midair while he's being flown to his home. He did not consent to that, but they had looked at him and they said he was drinking heavily. He had cried to Kissinger a couple times, which is just like showing your throat to a bear. You don't cry in front of Kissinger. He'll fucking rape you to death right there. But no, they kept the nuclear football. The precedent's there.
I'm glad to hear they did.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. To me,
I don't believe that Biden has those codes anymore either. I don't think anybody's that that dumb. But at the same time, like, you know, I also don't think that anybody who would likely to have them at this point would show any more good sense than Biden would.
Well, my concern is, imagine the Cuban Missile Crisis without a Kennedy. So, and all of a sudden, now you've got a committee running the operation. My concern is that we don't have a well-defined leader. So it's not true. Biden. It's not Harris. I don't believe it's Obama. I think that's a shallow analysis.
Yeah, that's a brain dead.
But I worry. And Glenn Greenwald wrote an article about this saying how dangerous it is to not have the guy to make the call.
The delineated alpha.
You need the delineated alpha, which Trump was fine, and George Sr. was fine, and even George Jr. was fine.
Even Obama and Clinton, they were still...
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like him or not, they were still in charge.
Biden is not fine, and we have no idea what kind of chaos is going on under the surface.
Big problem here, and this is, again, we get back to Davos. If you look at the governments that they put in place, it's always the same thing. You have a weak leader at the center of a weak government.
Yeah.
Okay. And now Biden is the perfect type of weak leader that you can have under our system. It's different than the European parliamentary systems, where you can have Olaf Scholz technically in charge of Germany, but really Robert Habeck runs the country.
Yeah.
Okay. The vice chancellor and interior minister.
So right. Maybe Victoria, not Victoria Nuland.
It's not Victoria Nuland. It's going to be
Chrystia Freeland. Chrystia Freeland. Right.
Chrystia Freeland is actually running
Canada.
Running Canada, not right. Justin Trudeau. Justin Trudeau right. is not smart enough to run a 7-Eleven, no less Canada.
Right.
Okay. So it's the same thing in so many places. So I want you to bracket for that. Do I think Obama's involved? I absolutely think Obama's involved. I think most of the day-to-day running of the Biden administration is being run by Susan Rice and Valerie Jarrett and all the rest of them, while the National Security Council, Sullivan, Blinken, Nuland, and company, they're the ones that actually run the country right now.
Yeah. See, Blinken seems like a meatloaf to me. That's the problem. He is, but
he's also a doctrinaire fucking neocon through and through, and he knows exactly what he's doing in every way. He knows exactly what he's doing. But they're all order takers. They're not order makers. None of them are order makers.
So who's the order maker?
Probably don't know. It's
obviously, you know what my answer to that is.
No, I don't.
Stavos. It's the Schwabian. Well,
Davos isn't even an order maker.
I mean, fine. Then let's go. Then the British Crown, the Rothschilds. You want to go that route? We'll go that route. Because those are the ones that are actually setting the agenda. So therefore, and that would include Bank of New York Mellon and BOFA and any of the New York banks that are still allied with these people. It's very clear that's who's running the show. Right. The real leaders of the world don't have Wikipedia pages. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Okay, absolutely. So does it matter actually at the end of the day who the real order makers are? We can view them through the reflection of the policies that the order takers put in place.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's all that really matters. That's the shadow play.
You see what they are through that.
You know, it's like...
By the way, your book, Poisoner in Chief, I went looking for a book to tell me that story last night, and I couldn't find one I trusted. Gottlieb is all over the Manson book.
You should. Poisoner in Chief's one of the best books I've ever read. It is an absolutely wild book. And then the author of Blitzed about Hitler and his drug use, Norman Ohler. I've had him on here.
Sometimes. Oh, have you seen the videos of Hitler looking like he's jonesing? Oh, yeah, or he's twitching. He's on amphetamines, which, by the way, the Germans were on amphetamines the whole war.
Dude,
right?
You should read Blitzed by Norman Ohler. That will melt your mind. Norman Ohler, Ohler. I've had him on here several times. I mean,
Whatever faction was behind Churchill is still running the UK.
Have you seen the Churchill quotes where he talks about how they're going to have to pick a fight with Germany? Like in 1936?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are weird.
They're not weird at all. Like, this is the British have been doing this shit. The British memed us in the World War One. They memed us in the World War Two. They're trying to meme us in the World War Three. Nothing new.
Well, so you mentioned that Lincoln was a win, but Lincoln seemed to box Britain out of the Civil War.
He did. The Brits were backing the South.
Right. The Emancipation Proclamation boxed them out.
Yeah. And then
so how did they end up winning by putting in Lincoln, I guess is my question. How's that a win for them?
They probably didn't.
I think they probably wanted Douglas one.
I think presidents get in that they don't like Andrew Jackson. I don't think they like Trump. There are momentary deviations.
Well, I mean, remember, I have to think of it this way. Also, at the time,
what's the name of the Norman Ohler book?
Blitzed, B-L-I-T-Z-E-D. Keep going, Tom.
What I was going to say is, it's like everything else. At every moment during the crisis moment in American history, when things are brought to the crisis point, do you think that it maps to two factions? Or do you think that there are multiple factions that then lead to the next phase of the crisis? So does the Panic of 1857 lead to the Civil War? Yes. Right. So likely we were staring at a situation where it was going to be necessary to have someone come to power in 1860. I don't think they were expecting Lincoln to win. Remember, Lincoln was a minority president. I think he only won the presidency in the House of Representatives vote. He didn't win a majority of the Electoral College. I mean, go back and look at that election.
Yeah.
That election is not like those. None of these are modern. Like we tend to look at old American presidential elections and put today's filter on them. Remember, the system was completely different back then. Right. We still had, state senates. We still had state senates, choosing senators. We still had a whole different system.
Right.
Pre-1913, everything was different. So the popular vote didn't really mean very much. The slates of electors that showed up didn't really mean as much. It's not the same system that we have today.
Yeah.
Just to remind everybody about this stuff. So it's important that we don't, that the historical context matters, what was going on at the time matters. If the goal was to break up the United States, and it was clear that the European powers were behind that by backing the South against the North to break it apart, well, then you can, someone asked me this morning, well, what's the origin of Britain's, sincere antipathy towards Russia, and then you have to think the American Civil War, because Lincoln doesn't win the war without the support of Russia. Period. He runs out of money.
This is very important.
Peter the Great backed Lincoln in the Civil War.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that until very recently. Actually,
I didn't know that.
Only the last couple of years.
Per Jim's question earlier, he's not here because the CIA handler.
To defend himself so we can talk about him.
Yeah.
He's silencing the chickens.
His silence is in approval. So as Jim was saying earlier, that Jewish women run the world. Put words in his mouth now. But we said how could we start slandering him wildly, block his email, and never talk to him again.
Gay Jewish women, I think, is the total.
He said gay Jewish
women. Let's get it right.
He was very clear when he texted me and said, Tommy, gay Jewish Ukrainian black women did 9/11. And I said, I think that's a stretch, but I'm a freedom of speech absolutist.
If he watches this, he's going to shit his pants.
He's going to fuck
us all.
Oh, my
God, so good. This is not going to be on YouTube.
Yeah, no.
I hope nobody from Newsmax
is watching. It's not going to be on YouTube long, I'll tell you that.
Haven't been on YouTube in a year and a half. And that's what Jim was saying. And, although I personally don't believe the Jews did 9/11, but Jim's entitled to his opinion. He's going to fucking slit my throat.
This ain't nothing better than a dry Irishman's wit. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, no, God.
But
yeah, the name Tommy's the, t- Tommy Kerrigan. Let me see. Are you Irish, Tommy?
Thomas Patrick Kerrigan, and my skin is reflective. Yeah. What do you think?
You're a fork in a microwave.
And that's why you can get away with living in Maine.
Yeah, exactly. These are my people.
Vitamin D deficiency.
These are my people. They see me, and although I have an American flag and I love America, I'm so white.
You're a Mick.
They see me, and they're like, he gets a pass. But what Jim said earlier was, that's how come we're not seeing this, per your hypothesis, Tom, about kind of the Wall Street gang going against Davos. Why aren't we seeing it more? One, I probably think they're doing it covertly. But two, I would look at, I don't think, maybe I'm being pulled in hook, line, and sinker. I don't think Elon Musk getting Twitter is good for Davos. I don't think it's good for the left. We're seeing all the October 31st leaks about how the government had portals into the back end of Twitter to ask for stuff to be, and not just about vaccines, about the withdrawal from
media pounded the thing. The media was nonstop.
The withdrawal from Afghanistan. They wanted to censor even inflation, the border crisis. We're seeing that's not good for them, which makes me think, Elon doing this, maybe we don't know who, like you said, we don't know who the names are.
Well, what we know so far is that we know that Prince Alawid,
the Jack Saudi Dorsey, Arabian, yeah,
and the Qatari in Sovereign Wealth Fund. That's what we know so far. Now, Alawid is interesting because,
we know what
he's the neutral Saudi. He's the one that was, waterboarded by MBS back in the line.
Yeah,
during the palace coup, during the family coup, where he locked everybody in the hotel.
Yeah,
MBS is a very interesting figure, and again, another guy like Putin, who I wouldn't want to have dinner with. I think having dinner with Putin would be actually quite cordial and actually quite fun.
I
wouldn't
want to
be in the same room with MBS for more than 2 minutes.
Oh yeah, I would too, but not in the past. I wouldn't go to the embassy to have it.
I'd have dinner with Stalin and Hitler just for the story. I'm trying to run a podcast.
Well, no, MBS to me actually is, I think, a little less rational.
Sure.
Okay. I think he can go
batshit on you. He can go batshit.
Yeah. I just, that's gotcha. Just like
this. He could be like some guy in Goodfellas. You go, oh no.
He's Joe Pesci in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Like, you look at him.
I was trying to come up with the name.
You wind up in a trunk. What I mean? And
that's exactly right. Or did you see the movie Legend?
No.
There's a movie called Legend about a couple of twin brothers who ran a mob in London. It's really good. It's called Legend.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Put it on your list.
Do you think Elon's acquisition of Twitter is a move of the Wall Street crew against Davos?
It
seems like
well
that's the first
be,
shot.
But the thing I worry about here is that the Musk is now going to be under pressure nonstop.
Uh-huh. We're already seeing it.
And you're seeing it from every angle. And they're not going to stop the same way they didn't stop trying to portray Brexit until they finally got rid of, three British prime ministers in like 3 weeks or two. Like Rishi Sunak isn't in charge either because they just want to replace him with Keir Starmer. So
I don't know these names at all, but keep going.
Sorry. So
no, that's no, don't explain. Too much.
So so British politics is even worse than ours. So yeah, I absolutely see that. And I'm really worried about the level to which they're going to try and burn Twitter down, because it's clear that, they're trying to create Hobson's choices for Musk at every turn. And,
Tell me what you know about Maloney, who I think is funnier than shit to listen to. The Italian prime minister.
Oh, Maloney. I'm sorry. I saw Irishman Maloney, Maloney. Maloney. I think Giorgia Maloney is,
the situation in
Italy is a very, it's complicated, clearly, because it's Italian politics. I think Giorgia Maloney is, a lot like Trump and Salvini before her, a political neophyte walking into a viper's nest. Because if you think our deep state is bad, well, you ain't met the Italians who created this shit.
Joe Pesci.
What's that?
Yeah, Joe Pesci.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this shit goes back to fucking Cicero and shit. I mean, this goes back to fucking Caesar and the rest. I mean, the Italians are good at this. So,
right.
I think Maloney is in a situation where she understands I do believe she understands the problem that she's in. And you'll notice that she's not trying to make any big waves at this point. So what she did was she blocked the migrant boats, which, by the way, are all French and German. I just wrote a piece for my
paper. Where her opponent defended her? She got accused of being this right-wing Nazi type, and her opponent came out and said, look, I fought a tough battle. I don't agree with her, but she's not a Nazi.
Yeah, she's not. So
right, but they try to sell her as one.
Oh, of course they do, because anybody to the right of Karl Marx is a fucking Nazi. So when you see people engage in that kind of rhetoric, you know they're fucking lying. It's just that
pure gaslighting. Absolutely.
So Maloney's situation, let's just look at where we are currently. I have some people over in Italy that feed me information behind the scenes and somewhat overtly and somewhat covertly about what's going on in Italy. And they're very worried, and they should be. And
what are they worried about?
They're worried about France and Germany obviously trying to destroy the Italians. Like, they need to break the Italians completely in order to make sure that they can't leave the European Union. Because Italy, Germany, and France represent the tripod on which the entire European Union rests.
Right.
Without any three of them,
a dipod doesn't work very well. Right.
The whole thing just falls apart. So Italy has always been the thing that they're worried about. Maloney coming to power in Germany, in Italy, you know where they want to go, which is they either want to take the Italians out of the EU or replace the Germans as the center of European power, one or the other. Well, now they have the opportunity to do that through a series of moves and machinations. And the big one is, of course, the gas hub coming out of turning Turkey into a gas hub and then allowing Italy to be the distribution network node for gas throughout the European Union and not Germany. That's what Nord Stream was about. Nord Stream was always going to be the means by which the Germans would force everybody else into political compliance, especially the Poles and others, the Czechs and others, through using the Opal pipeline. So the first thing they do is they create a migrant crisis for her to work with. She blocks the boats. Notice that she's not in the same political hot water over this that Salvini was 5 years ago. Why? Because Five Star's not there to stab him in the back. She's got a full coalition of people behind her who agree with her. She doesn't have a split government, right? So the next thing that's coming is going to be budget rules and whether or not the EU is going to be willing to continue to support the Italian bond market, which they have to do if the Italians want to. But here's the thing. That's a blackmail and that's a bluff.
Which is the blackmail? The Germans are
the Germans and the French are trying to blackmail the Italians into saying you have to accept German austerity, which is raise taxes, raise regulations, cut
give
spending,
us all your gold destroy, and all that
destroy,
shit.
Destroy the country and accept all the migrants. Maloney has already said no to the migrants. Now the EU is immediately turning to COVID relief funds and support of the Italian bond market and everything else, and budgetary rules.
Back up for a sec. Why did the migrants all flood in without opposition? What was that? That was a play, and I don't know whose it was.
It was Germany and France's. All the boats that were carrying all these migrants in from North Africa, they're all German and French boats.
Why?
Because you want to put those people on the freaking dole. You want to destroy the Italian budget by adding them into the entitlement system, and then you're going to cause budget austerity, and you're going to destroy what's left of the Italian middle class.
And you cause friction.
Selective blowing up of the EU in some way.
You're blowing up you're blowing up Italian community and Italian culture. Italy is still a very tight knit community.
Is that why they sent a bunch up to Sweden too?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's the Kalergi plan that came from
it's
the
no state. Different never, than, it's never no different than zip code that. Targeting to turn Minneapolis into Somalia the North.
Yeah.
Right.
No, Dave, look it up. Kalergi plan. Kalergi. From the 1970s. It was to flood third world migrants to the West to destabilize it, collapse it, and then you can bring in a strong arm of autocracy.
So the budget rules are going to be the big thing with Italy. And I've already identified this. And this one's really simple to understand. You've got $640 billion of the target two liabilities that, you know, mostly are owed to the German Bundesbank, right? And every day the Italians issue more debt because they're running a budget deficit, blah, 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 which the ECB is packaging up and selling to the rest of Europe through various forms of QE. One alphabet soup program after another alphabet soup program.
Whatever it takes.
But it comes down to when you owe the bank $1,000, it's your problem. When you owe the bank $640.6 billion, it's your problem. So if they try to turn to Maloney and say, look, we will stop supporting your economy and we will stop supporting your bond markets if you don't accept our rules. And if she just turns around and goes, that's nice.
Screw you. Yeah, right.
Do it. I dare you. What do you think happens at that point? German-Italian bond spreads start to blow out, interest rate swaps blow out, carry trades blow up, and the entire and all of the Italian banks collapse. And guess
okay,
what?
Let me ask you this:
German banks now, and the Fed is not there to bail everybody out.
So I was thinking about this the other day.
This is really important. The last point is. That what my Italian friends keep telling me is that if the United States stands behind Italy, i.e. if the American banks and the American military, because the most stand behind Maloney, then France can't come in. And literally the French are literally amassing on the border to take Northern Italy. No one talks about this, but this is what? Real.
Really?
Like they're moving
like
French
military?
Troops in Italian. Police and gendarme and Italian military uniforms. They're moving French troops into Northern Italy.
Really?
This is news to me. Holy shit.
They're serious about not allowing Italy out. And Macron is complaining about Italy. And every time Macron opens his mouth about Italy, it's about this shit. Now, question. So, the other question is the French military going to go along with this? Because the French military fucking hates Macron.
How big is the French military compared to the Italian military, for example?
It's the French military is one of the strongest militaries in Europe.
Okay.
Still, always have been, and the French are very good at war.
Here's my question I've been pondering the other day, reminded that we have $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives, and that our system is what appears to be 99%+ for the purpose of just moving money around. Mm-hmm. Nothing more, no wealth creation, nothing useful, nothing credible. Is this system guaranteed at some point to blow up, or can this game go on back and forth like a infinite Wimbledon game?
I don't think it can. I think the system is collapsing, and they need a cover story for the collapse. And the cover story for the collapse of the pension systems. And remember, in Europe, what you saw in England with the UK gilt market and the levered, the LDI plays that blew up on the pension funds, they all were running, they were all trying to get yield to cover their pension liabilities through playing leverage bets on UK gilts, US treasuries, and all this other stuff. But the Fed
risk parity.
Why do you have to go and get extra basis points in order to get the extra yield? Why do you need to do that now? You can just go buy a US treasury with a 4% coupon.
Right.
Why do you have to take on any leverage? You can just buy a treasury. You don't have to buy a leverage bet against the treasury. You can just buy the treasury.
Because there's now enough basis
and
points.
And by taking the leverage out of the system, you now take the liquidity out of the euro dollar markets. And what leverage giveth on the way up takes away twice as fast.
Well, that's consistent with what everyone's talking about. There's no question that's true. But
by the way,
great,
where are the most what country houses the most American military bases?
Italy.
I would have said Germany, but
you both would have said Germany, but the answer is Italy.
Yeah, I think it is Italy.
It's over
100. Yeah, there's a great book called Base Nation by David Vine.
By the way, there's 336 bioweapons labs, U.S. bioweapons labs around the globe. There's 36 in Ukraine, but there's 336 around the globe.
I think we have 810 military bases around the world.
Oh, my God.
Dude, read Base Nation by David Vine. I mean, good Lord. The projection of the U.S. military is truly in every inch of the world.
So that's where Peter Zeihan comes in the discussion, who I think has good facts and dubious philosophies. But he talks about very much so.
He's a classic neocon plant.
Absolutely.
To take facts and then twist them into classically bad conclusions. Peter Zeihan is Kyle Bass 2.0.
With respect to China,
and Russia,
but Zeihan, I think his facts might be okay. So his conclusions I ignore, because first of all, they're not only do I not agree with them, but the precision of his predictions is ridiculous. So he'll say China's going to collapse in 10 years. I go, I don't think so. I mean, it might, but he just knows it. I mean, that's how he presents himself.
Himself that way because he has inside information from the people who are running the policy.
Gonna try to blow it up.
And that's what their timetable is.
Right.
He's a spook.
Right. Well, he came from Stratford, so he is.
No, really? Oh.
Yeah,
I didn't know that, but I'm shocked.
Yeah,
shocked
I know.
I had
know.
On the
yeah.
chief of security.
I did a podcast with the guy. I was telling about Zeihan and Stratford, and the guy on the podcast said, "Well, I used to be a Stratford too." And I go,
"I had on the chief of security from Stratford."
What's his name?
Fuck, I don't know. He wrote a book.
Too many drugs, Tommy.
I don't do anything. I don't even drink anymore.
Too many chokes.
Yeah, too much choking the chicken. FYI, I used to subscribe to Stratford just so I could get the disinformation campaign.
I would keep track of the enemy.
What it is they wanted me to think so that I could know to do the opposite.
That's brilliant. Well,
it's like when they started reporting
the
UFOs.
Indicator. It's like the Goldman Sachs leading indicator. Whatever Goldman tells you to go long, you go short.
Right. Or at least not believe.
Yeah, when they're all in lockstep saying defend Ukraine, I'm like, all right, so we're doing something horrible in Ukraine. Like, that's what it is.
So the longtime journalists and guys who've been watching this shit for a long time said they've never seen a more politically, more propaganda slathered military adventure than Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
They said absolutely busted. Well, I don't know about from Russia's side because we can't get the information very easily.
What we get from the Russians is tainted in their own.
Sure. No question, but we don't doubt that. So we don't doubt that.
You got to attenuate everybody's numbers by 50% at this point.
But the Western media is off the charts ridiculous. I mean, when they try to say the Russians blew up their own pipeline and they were bombing themselves
plant that they control.
Exactly. And killing guys in train stations, shooting missiles from Ukrainian controlled region of Ukraine. And blowing up their own bridge. That's the garish thing again. That's one of these, you're trying to make me crazy. You're gaslighting, right? You're gaslighting
it's
me.
It's to break your brain. It's
it's gone.
You know, what's fascinating, Dave, is that the psyops are so sophisticated now, they're trying to drive someone like me crazy. I see through all of this shit. Right, I look at all that, and then there's another level beyond that.
Yeah. See, this is I think the important point is that people say, "Well, that's just Russian disinformation, whatever." And I go, "I don't think the Russians can hold a candle to our machine."
Oh no, I think
they're good, but we're nowhere close. But the Brits are.
But they don't have the firepower in their machine. They just don't have the reach.
But the Brits are everywhere.
So I should be
remember,
watching the Brits.
There's a reason why I've said this recently in almost every forum, and I probably haven't said it to you. Just remember, why did the sun never set on the British Empire?
Why?
Because God didn't want these fucking people running around in the dark.
God robbed the demons of their home playing field.
He wants them in the light.
Yeah, he's like, I'm watching you fuckers.
I mean,
none of you are hanging out with Uncle Epstein.
Just that simple. They really are that perfidious. I mean, they really.
So did we knock off the queen, or that old bitch bite it?
No,
I'm not going to go as far as Jim.
She's so old, it doesn't matter.
I'm not going to go as far as Kunstler earlier saying that she killed JFK.
I think the timing on all of this and the way they moved afterwards. I think Liz was sick for a while. I think they delayed when they told us that it was happening. Did they knock her off? Maybe. But
at this point, what does it matter? She's so old.
Well, it's not like Prince Charles the only problem.
But she was the only moderating influence within the British aristocracy.
And the reason for that is...
And as much as I hate the British crown, I did have a soft spot for Liz, because Liz's imprinting as a person was loading artillery shells into fucking cannons to beat off the Germans during the Battle of Britain. So whether you hate the British crown or you don't, I even had to do this with Alex Craner one time, because Alex is like, fuck the British crown. And he's right. But I'm like, but Liz, I think, was a different beast. And that there was only, yeah, I think she wanted Brexit. I think she was behind. I think she and Trump wanted Brexit. And I think Boris Johnson did not want Brexit. And I think she wanted her country to be sovereign again. And
so what's King Charles in this story now?
Oh, he's all the way down the rabbit hole, the whole Davos COP27, the whole, these.
So they did want him to take over sooner.
Oh, absolutely. They did.
Okay. I wouldn't have.
What about,
I think Liz seriously considers skipping over him.
Can you do that? Did she have the power to give the crown to her son, her grandson?
No, William. I think so.
Should have given it to Harry, hot queen. Of course, he still got a hot queen. Either way.
What about that Rothschild guy dying?
That
on election
was interesting
day
that happened. That happened
during
at the same time.
During like a
that
blood. Was,
that's
moon.
Interesting. I have a patron. I have a longtime patron and good friend now, and she's heavily into the woo woo of the astrology.
Yeah.
Like she was telling me, she's 4 days before the election night. She's like, these things are lining up, and like, oh look. But what we got rid of one of the Rothschilds,
like the chief dog.
I wasn't expecting that one. She was expecting something else, which is like, that's
did
trash.
You did one of the explosions? I can't remember if it's the pipeline or the bridge, was done on Putin's birthday.
It was the bridge. Putin's 70th birthday.
But man,
that was a big fuck you from the Ukrainians and the Brits.
Yeah, but man, yeah.
Rothschild, so did Sikorsky fuck up by thanking the U.S. or
Sikorsky
was that?
Works. Yeah, no, he was. That was pure. Again, that goes right back into the whole, we have to blame the Americans for everything.
Then he deleted the tweet. So the question is, was that all the plan? Put it out there, delete
yes.
it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And notice that when Putin talked about all these actions, he never mentioned the Americans. He always mentioned the Anglo-Saxons.
I didn't notice that.
Facebook.
Every time he issued statements on this, he always mentioned the Anglo-Saxons and not the Americans.
That's hilarious.
The press ran with it as if Putin blames the Americans, but that message was received loud and clear at Whitehall and 10 Downing Street.
Well, that's awesome. Don't see why, for example. I'm having trouble figuring out who's Putin really allied with.
Yeah, I certainly haven't figured it out.
Oh, he's allied with MBS.
Right.
Iran.
Yeah.
G.
Yeah.
And Erdogan. And to a lesser and Modi, and for the most part, Modi in Italy, in India.
I saw a headline the other day, by the way, that blew my circuits. It said, and it might have been older, I pulled out of my notes, that said that we bombed Syria 3 days to send a message to Tehran. And my first thought is, I didn't remember Tehran being in Syria. And then I'm thinking, and I don't think bombing one country to send a message to another country should be put out in the open like that. You know, it seems to be that it's kind of embarrassing looking to a human being.
Did anybody notice that they started bombing Syria the day that Netanyahu came back into power?
I didn't notice.
I did.
Jesus.
This is what I do. I get up in the morning and I scan the headlines.
I've got
a thousand people on a Slack server throwing
you and Whitney Webb are puzzle connectors.
Will not respond to my emails, nor will Glenn Greenwald, and I take personal offense to that.
Well,
you know,
are you connected with her in any way?
No. But I have sent her emails. I've also sent emails to Putin. So.
She was just on Glenn Beck, dude. Her star has risen to the point where she's not going to probably not going to respond to you now.
Oh, I know. I know.
I'll tell you who you might get. I know Whitney personally.
I've had her on my podcast. I've been on shows with her. I know her personally. I think that whole cadre, and I don't mean this, and this is going to sound churlish and it's going to sound bad, but I think that the whole cadre of people in that group, and I respect them all for what they do, James Corbett, Whitney Webb, Ryan Christian, and others. Right. They're all in the same cadre, which is that they're incredible dot connectors.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But they're that doesn't mean that connectors. They have a very focused. This is where confirmation bias comes in. What you were worried about earlier, Dave, is that like Whitney uncovered that it was Kissinger who made Klaus Schwab. So obviously Davos is an American thing.
I read Whitney a little different. I read Whitney as actually knowing that she's not putting together the big picture, that she views her role as putting together puzzle pieces that fit.
Right.
Smaller chunks
and saying, look at this guy. I do that a lot. I mean, I try to do that a lot where it's like, I can't, like Uvalde, there's puzzle pieces that don't make sense, but I don't have the big picture. I don't.
This is the fun part about this. My problem was, you know, I keep going back to when she invited me onto the thing in February to do the roundtable discussion about whether Putin was a WEF agent that I did with Matt Arrett. It was me and Matt Arrett versus Ian Davis and Riley Wagaman. It was hosted by Off Guardian, went huge, went wide. Everybody was like, holy shit, dude. And I just destroyed the conversation. And I said, I was actually hesitant to do this. And I told Whitney flat out, I said, you know, in private DM, I said, I'm not going to be kind here because this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I mean, there are many things in this life that I'm willing to entertain. Putin working for the WEF? No. And the reason why I was trying to make this argument as what I was trying to say this is that you connect some dots and you see things as, well, they said this, that means this, that means this, that means this, because this particular term, Matt Arrett talks about the fourth industrial revolution this way all the time. He says, look, the term the fourth industrial revolution doesn't mean the same thing in China and Russia as it does at the WEF. And with the WEF, it means transhumanism, chips in your heads, blah, 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 blah. To them, it just means the next evolution of industry.
Yeah.
It just means
the other risk is when
it's
you're
not
connecting
transhumanism. And when you listen to the fifth column, this like that fucking asshole Riley Wagaman, and known motherfucker, I will never do another fucking thing with you. I hope you're listening. You fucking fifth column, this asshole. I know you and I know who you are, you motherfucker. Fuck that guy. He works for the fucking worst people on the fucking planet, that motherfucker. He kind of contacts me out of the blue.
So you guys are not getting along? Is that what I'm inferring?
I want you to talk to me about the gold-backed ruble. I said, you go fuck yourself. I already explained myself in public.
I don't know who that is, but I'll take
it. Oh, that guy used to be a Russia insider. That whole fucking thing was a nest of fucking U.S. and British neocons.
I'll follow you in a
battle. Right for those people.
I'll blindly follow you in a battle. I don't know. I'm fucking.
I'm a douchebag. Like I name care. Names. I don't care anymore because we're on the verge of World War III. I don't give a shit.
Yeah,
like you know what I mean. Like there comes a point.
I'll be the drummer boy for World War III.
So here I had a question before it got suppressed by crazy. Are there serious players in this game trying to get us into nuclear war, or is that just noise?
No, I think I think it's real.
What's the purpose of that though? Nuclear war. I get the fear.
I don't know about nuclear war, but I certainly think that they want to put us in a position that's nuclear brinksmanship. They've destroyed nuclear brinksmanship, and now it's nuclear blackmail. We are always being with these psychopaths. You always have to remember one thing: it's always a Hobson's choice. So the Hobson's choice over sealing the election is. You can either secede, red states, because nanny nanny poo poo, we stole your election. Or if you win this election, because you came out in numbers that we couldn't cheat to overcome, then I can't even be associated with any of these red state MAGA Nazis anymore. And California needs to secede. Davos wins if the United States breaks up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
which reminds me of the Putin quote where he said the biggest disaster. Was the collapse of the Soviet Union.
It was the worst day of
his life. Which gets quoted all the time, but they forget to mention that he followed that with because it released a bunch of basically unguided countries into chaos.
And the point being is that's
dead right.
Tens of millions of people woke up without a country. They didn't that's know right. if their driver's license was any
it
good.
It would be
they
like if the 50
was any good.
That's right.
They were trapped. Right.
Be like if the 50 states blew apart, what kind of carnage would that be, right?
Who benefits from now? Who pays? So who now indemnifies the $31 trillion worth of U.S. sovereign debt?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's one of the most misquoted phrases in as evidence Putin wants to reassemble the Soviet Union. He doesn't even want to occupy Ukraine.
No.
But people think he does.
I know.
Because they've been sold that story by the press.
Mm-hmm. Tom, for you, Tom, what is the 40,000 foot, like really zoomed out? What is the goal of the Rothschild, the British Crown, Davos over the
maintain
next?
Maintain all of their power, turn us into techno-feudal feudal serfs.
That's pretty much what I thought. Okay.
Why the fuck does someone? I know people in power have done this since the dawn of civilization, but I still don't understand why.
Why what?
Power.
Why did
they love
the King
power.
Of France?
Dave, can I ask you a question?
They
Dave?
Love well, dominion
I think it's
over
about. I think it's about you? Neurotransmitters. I think it's
well,
about neurotransmitters.
I know. I was just gonna say. It's a very simple question, Dave, and I don't mean this. Simply put, do you believe in some form of higher power that you are willing to submit yourself to?
Well, my wife.
Ew.
Should be good enough for most men. But
well, that's a loaded. It's a highly loaded question because we do it every day, right? I mean,
I don't mean that in a terrestrial sense. I mean that in a, is there something that moderates your, is there something that you bow to that moderates your behavior?
Like, yeah, morality.
Okay, you have a morality. You can define that morality either about as being subservient to God, who helps define your morality for you, or in my case, the non-aggression principle, or the second law of thermodynamics, or the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, or and some combination thereof, right?
Or just, I want to be a good guy.
Well, but why, right? But again, but how you define that matters.
Well, that's our congenital narcissism.
Okay, now, what if you're a psychopath who were born, not made,
right,
and you don't
yeah.
submit to a higher power.
Yeah,
right. Then you got
when
no
you've
guidance.
Got nothing but neurofeedback that your decisions are true and correct, and everybody else is just chattel and cattle for
just
you to
pawns.
Farm because they're morons.
Yeah, I think that's
and that's been going on for generations.
Been going on for millennia.
I know.
You set up systems that reward the psychopaths as they move up the ladders of power.
Yeah.
So that you have lieutenants who are just as psychopathic carrying out your wishes because they have the exact same worldview that you do. And then you create an educational system that says, yeah, we don't believe in anything. And we're going to replace God with the state.
Yeah.
Right.
I think this
is my worldview, but it's still as a person who has some moral compass, I'd like to think. It's hard to intuit.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
You really do have to kind of think like Emperor Palpatine.
Right.
Yeah,
and then
I think you gotta it's I think,
and internalize that, and you have to realize that that's who you're fighting.
It's like playing a video game or something, and you can be detached from it because it's just you and your buddies playing a game of fucking some World War II game. Just right. Think about how little of a shit you actually give, even if your best friend's like, it's a video game. I'll fucking team kill my guys. I don't give a shit.
Well, well I thought about the fact that
Skinner box, dude.
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
And we all have a button to push.
So I thought about the fact that the guys who have to make calls that involve killing, say, thousands upon thousands of Nazis in Germany, right? Let's just start there. Those guys are sort of a knife edge away from being able to call for the death of thousands of anybody, right? So I realized that the ability to make that call means that you, so if you decide, okay, we're going to bring down the Twin Towers to achieve this goal, they're just casualties of war. They're not Americans versus, you know, some perceived evil Arab. They're just deaths, they're stats.
Or you could even say that in Kissinger, like Cheney's mind or something, you might look at that and go, I'm not a bad person for killing 3,000 Americans because I just saved.
That's an Omaha Beach moment.
Well, they might look at it the exact same way. Eisenhower probably didn't look at, oh my God, I'm killing all these men. He went, I'm saving all of these Americans. You might look at Rumsfeld and Cheney on September 10th and they might be saying, you motherfucker, I'm saving 30 million Americans.
Right.
Are they psychopaths or are they the most patriotic guys in the world? There's another soundbite someone's going to tune in on.
I'm a Mobius strip from hell where I keep ending up back in the same place.
Honestly, I'm kind of getting to a point where this is bad, but I'm kind of just watching the whole thing now and I'm sort of in awe at the intricacy of the game. Like, obviously evil, there's obviously good, and you should fight for the good against the evil. But that's not true at all.
Couching any of the shit in terms of good and evil is leading you down the wrong path.
But more and more, I find myself...
But people who want to groom my kids for sexual slavery?
Well, they're evil.
No, they're fucking evil.
You're right. But more and more, I find myself, and this is bad, but
couching it good and evil tends to simplify it too much. That gets you get to stop thinking rather than why are they doing it?
Agreed, Dave. When you're talking about the players at the table, at the end of the day, the tactics they use are evil, but what they're doing is you have to assess them in the terms of personal incentives. But go ahead, Tom.
But the point of all of that is I find myself more and more like I'm watching a game between two teams I don't care about, and I'm kind of just in awe at, like, the physical ability of someone to, you know, get an assist and nail a three-pointer from 50 feet away. I'm just kind of
what I was going to say. Me watching a basketball game.
I'm just like
anybody because I'm just like fucking sport.
But that's what for me the elections are. So I'm stunned by the lack of a red wave because I personally believe when you're as bad as the blue team has been, you should be sent to the bench to ponder the mistakes you made, to make you pivot back to the middle, to get your shit together. It's a timeout, right? You got to make them pay. And we didn't. But I'm watching it from this more disconnected view where I go, they probably rigged it. They probably made sure that they got, you know, the vote count. But I find myself getting a little less emotionally attached to, oh my God.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's a survival mechanism for my own brain.
It is. Well, it's saturation.
Well, for me, it was the realization that they ginned up the worst possible outcome when I started assessing the entire game board.
Right.
Every vector, an election like this with this result winds up with everybody you don't want to win, gotta win.
Right. Which is the gaslighting. Right?
And I mean, the three happiest people on Wednesday morning were King Charles III, Klaus Schwab, and Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell wanted continuity of government more than he wanted any attempt to.
No question.
And that's
a trivial question. This is one of the chess pieces that's so small it doesn't matter. But
sure.
Where's Tulsi Gabbard end up soon?
Well, with this election result now, my entire electoral map for 2024 is thrown for a loop. Because
what's Trump's announcement going to be?
I don't even know what Trump should do at this point. I actually want Trump out of the fucking picture completely.
Well, regardless, he said he's got an announcement for the 15th.
I know. And Gabbard,
Not believed he wanted to run again. My hunch has always
always thought he didn't want to run too, but I'm at the point now, I'll be honest with you. What I wanted to see was a good solid red wave, a rebuke of the Democrats, a rebuke of the crazy,
exactly.
Allowing now the Fed and the banks to then start moving it's turning the corner for the United States so we can start moving in the right direction. And then you set up some form of unity ticket for 2024,
which would be DeSantis.
Gabbard or Trump Gabbard. Okay, she declares and becomes a member of the GOP at the fucking convention.
So she cut a deal, right? Probably. She's already got a deal. Got a deal.
Now.
Because she went straight RNC. It was overnight. Boom, a switch was thrown.
Right. Yeah. Well, she came in seeing how bad things were and said, okay, if the Republican government, if the GOP isn't going to support these candidates, I have to come in and support these candidates. That was a very powerful statement. And notice who she supported. She went into the districts that Mitch McConnell didn't want.
And she bitched about the fact that he turned on him and didn't help him.
Right. So clearly Gabbard is in the camp that is trying to stop what's happening.
Yeah.
Right.
Clearly she's in that mode. So now the question is.
So she's not a sociopath, is your point?
Oh, no. Tulsi Gabbard is anything other than...
I've been watching her for about 10 years, waiting for her to show up. And then she showed up. She showed up in 2020.
Yep.
And so
now, with this result, I don't even want to go into the election. I want the GOP to get everything they want. They want to run Nikki Haley. They want to run Nikki Haley and John McCain 2.0. I think they should do that.
But
I think we should have the worst fucking election of all time. I think DeSantis should stay in fucking Florida. I think Trump shouldn't fucking run. I think you should just allow them to do the whole Hillary versus Jeb Bush thing that they wanted in 2016 and have the entire country go, you know what? Fuck you people.
Well, so I...
Fuck them all.
My desire also is that although... And I've said this multiple times, is if you think the Republicans are going to somehow fix it, you're dreaming. No. But the bullshit they're going to feed me will taste better. Right? Because
they'll put a little butter on the bullshit.
Well, the bullshit that the Democrats have fed us is absolutely nauseating, vomit-inducing bullshit.
And again, it's designed to outrage you. It's designed to trigger the disgust circuit.
I want to be able to... That's why I watch Tucker Carlson. I like his bullshit better than anyone else's bullshit.
Of course.
Are y'all cool with wrapping this one up?
Yeah.
I've got a Tim Dillon quote to wrap this up about Jeb Bush. he said this right after 2016. He goes, the plane of America isn't landing at Disney World. None of us are surviving this flight. Trump's trying to turn the plane around and there's turbulence and it's shaking and everyone's mad. Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton, they would have put the plane, they would have put on an Adam Sandler movie, they would have served drinks for free, and in the middle of the night when you're lulled to sleep, you wouldn't even see it, they'd turn the plane, the angle would be so slight, and then you'd just be in the side of the mountain and it'd be over. They were trying to put you down humanely and we didn't let it happen. So now we're getting it like we deserve.
Well, this is back to this is the way they handle things like the truckers and everything. It comes down to, look, you can either pretend like everything's going fine or we're going to beat you like a rented mule. The trucker story was so amazing to me because it was a truly heartwarming protest.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was the most spectacular. And then they just said, OK, that was fun. But boom.
You saw the state
done.
Power. You saw
you're
the
done. And by the way, you think the January 6th guys got it bad? Well, we're going to do it to you again.
It's bad. More and more, I just find myself trying to make my immediate universe better, try to be a good person, donate to the homeless shelter, hold the door, help an old guy at Walmart. And maybe
a good guy. That's my want to be a good guy.
More and more, and I'm just watching the game. No, like,
you're absolutely right, Tommy. I mean,
I don't know what else to do. I can't.
So I have another. I heard another rumor that I want to see if, since we've got puzzle pieces.
I don't think we should give any more credence to James Kunstler, who thinks that the Pope raped Jeffrey Epstein in the White House. I don't think we should give any more fuel to his conspiracy. I'm all for free speech, but.
After snorting cocaine off her Ukrainian hooker's pussy.
He thinks Hillary Clinton
I need help making a connection. I have got this single data point connection that connects, you're not going to believe this, QAnon shaman with Ukraine. Has anyone heard anything about this?
No.
This is the episode that somehow gets me banned from Rumble.
Right. Getting banned from Rumble. It is time to get a real job.
That's a moment.
That's the universe telling you something, dude.
That's writing on the wall. That's the universe saying, the next step is you in an orange jumpsuit and Gitmo.
Well, you saw where DuckDuckGo turned on the guy.
Well, they got video of that CEO at Epstein's Island raping a kid. There's no other.
I know, but everyone thought that was the good guys. All of a sudden, he turns and I go, "Oh my god!"
They got a video of him.
This is the thing. This is what they always do. They have these things laid out. Many different ways. Like, they have nothing else. We give them all this fucking money to sit around all day long and think up
and
shit
just scheme more
and we
contingency plans.
I think the three of us are stuck in MK Ultra experiments, and we don't even know it. They're jamming electrodes into our brains.
It's evil, but it's brilliant. It's evil, but it's brilliant.
It's like when your teenager outplays you. You have a teenager.
It's like an Ocean's 11.
Oh, fuck, I can't believe
it's like an Ocean's 11 when the owner of the casino just says, like, congratulate. Like, he's just, you got me. I'm almost kind of like, you know what, New World Order, You did it. That's impressive. I don't like it. You're all demons, but
I underestimated you.
Touche. Yeah. Touche. I didn't know Donald Trump was an android. Whatever.
Jim Kunstler, we got to fill that blank again.
They never knew Kunstler was fucking the handler of Epstein. Who would have known? I didn't know that he literally raped the queen to death. that was a black pill moment for me. I thought he was a good guy.
He's never coming back on. Or he's, put it this way, if he comes back on, he's never leaving early.
He's coming back
on. This is like not wanting to leave a party till it's over.
He's going to come on. He's going to get me banned from Rumble.
If you guys...
He's going to come on here with a diagram about the shape of skulls, and he's going to get me banned from the internet.
My concept, but...
What?
Y'all need to read Philip K. Dick's A Scanner Darkly.
Oh, yeah.
What is it?
Philip K. Dick's A Scanner Darkly.
I read that in high school.
I'm still missing it. You're saying it too fast.
A Scanner Darkly. You can even watch the movie by Richard Linklater. It's actually really well done.
The movie is incredible.
They're both very good. But I think the reason I bring this up is because... Yeah, it's fiction. Well...
Docudrama.
I mean, it's thinly veiled.
The reason why A Scanner Darkly is so good is because every time you think you've got it sussed out as to what the actual plot of this book is and what the actual situation is and how deep the psyops go, until you get the final reveal,
you have no idea. You keep thinking you're scratching.
And the final reveal, I will not spoil it for you, Dave, if you've never read it or you've never watched
it. I'll watch the movie.
The book's not long. It's only a Philip K. Dick novel. It's only 225 fucking pages. You can read it in 3 hours.
The movie is almost longer than the book is.
Daniel Ellsberg was talking to Kissinger before he got top security clearance. And he said to Kissinger, he says, Henry, when you get top security clearance and you get to see what's there, he says, at first you're going to be shocked and then you're going to be elated. He says, then you're going to be talking to some 3-star general who doesn't know what you know. And he's going to be telling you shit. And you're going to go, I don't believe this guy's worth a shit anymore. And he says, then you're going to become kind of a bonehead. I don't remember how he said it, but he was warning him that when he gets to that top echelon, that he will join the club of those who say, none of you understand. And that's when it gets dangerous. And because you say, well, you don't understand.
And then when you're in that world for long enough, all of a sudden you realize there's another inner group.
And that, you do another iteration of it.
And that's what it keeps you that's think right. you think
and
you,
that's the lesson of the Scanner Darkling.
Yeah, that's the Scanner Darkling.
You're an emperor of Rome and you realize that will not be for long.
Yeah.
Just understand that the protagonist of the Scanner Darkling, that's all of us.
So yeah. I had dinner with John Deutsch after he was done being head of the CIA. I've always had the suspicion that he had not a clue what was going on in the CIA. He was not one of the guys who they bothered to tell him. I also have this theory that the CIA is structured like a bunch of sleeper cells.
Yes.
And nobody knows what's going on inside the CIA.
I'll be honest.
You're going to love this movie, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I kind of go one step even deeper than Rothschild.
More fucked up.
I go one step even further than like the Illuminati in that I don't think the people in charge know that they're the innermost circle because they've gone through so many.
Oh, that's
circles.
Interesting.
No, but really.
I
think of it like a video game where it's like a map and it's like last one survives, right? And you have like a counter on the map. You can see how many people are left, and it's just you and one guy, and it goes on for like an hour, and you're both crawling through the woods, and then finally you see a movement a mile away and you blow his brains out and it's like winner and you're like, oh, I fucking did it. Or
it's the Truman Show.
But
the Hunger Games.
In this world, you don't have a counter and there's nothing that says you're the winner. You don't know if you've killed everyone. I don't think the people in charge know that they're in charge.
If there's someone above them,
I think they
get them.
Think that there's something, and it's like, it's kind of beautiful. I think
this is why leaders is why leaders show a profound paranoia.
Yeah, yeah, because they think
this is why Saddam offs a bunch of guys in his Senate.
Yeah.
To scare the fuck out of the rest, hoping somehow he can contain it.
I don't
why
think
Putin
it just never ends.
Has to keep
it's
control.
Just this infinite dance.
I think they think there's another, and they're all playing. If let's just say it's us, we're behind the Illuminati, behind the Rothschilds, behind the, it's just us, and we're all talking to each other. And we've had the veil ripped away so many times where we thought we knew, and then we got into an even deeper circle.
But if we were the triad,
oh, so now we're going to go, now we're going to what, do the prisoner thing?
No, but listen, no,
that's right,
of,
that's right. No, no, that's right.
Yeah,
if we were the triad, we couldn't trust each other.
Exactly.
So you're never safe.
Even if we were objectively at the highest rung, we would all still be thinking they're in on.
He could fuck me.
They're testing me. They're testing me for another initiation. There is no other initiation.
You know, it would be like if you know King Charles is looking down at William saying he could off me.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you can do is
that's happened so many times.
Well, and then
many times.
Well, I've thought about this before. Let's say you are in the innermost circle, the fucking like the deepest bunker, and you can take a bet. You can go, I think we are in charge. You can act on that bet and see if there's any repercussions, but they won't act on it because it took so long to get there. They don't want to risk it.
I will not. I am really resisting now going into the whole chaos magic meme it into existence thing.
Oh no, I think it comes down to
I'm dead
physics.
Serious when I say this. I'm like, we keep doing things like this, and we create the future by just writing it down.
Oh, absolutely.
Interesting. So it becomes self-fulfilling.
Oh no,
there's a brilliant comic book writer by the name of Grant Morrison. I don't know if you guys ever read any of Morrison's work. So, Animal Man, Doom Patrol. He wrote some of the best Batman ever done. JLA, yada yada yada. But Grant Morrison is a chaos musician. Chaos magician.
Yeah.
And go look him up on YouTube. Go look up him talking about chaos magic.
Oh, yeah. There's a great interview with
process.
Sorry.
And the process of doing it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's
really stopped to think about what he was talking about in all of these stories.
It's like Suzuki violin. It's like Suzuki violin. By playing the violin, you learn to play the violin.
Right. Well, no, it's even better than that. When you say, I want this to occur,
you're putting
you
it into
make it happen by making it into a thing and then writing it down and putting it into laying your will upon the universe and making it happen.
So like
did you see the X-File that talked about the pandemic?
Yes.
Oh, is that amazing? They nailed it. And then the question is, did someone plant that?
Or is it chaos? X-File, is it chaos?
At the end of the day, like when you sit down and you read all the stories that he wrote, and I'm thinking particularly about The Invisibles, which was a comic book he did about secret societies and, you know, all of this stuff. And it was an homage to Jerry Cornelius and all this crazy shift in the 60s. And but when I think about that, I wrote an editorial for my newsletter about a year and a half ago about this, saying, you know, when you really stop to think about this, did he make all this happen by turning this, knowing him, did he believe with all of his being that when he wrote this, was he creating the very future that would expose all of this, that would set us on this path to the next level of human consciousness? Because that's what that story is about. And when you really start to think about art, and what art's capable of, and why the artists always get there first, are they actually doing that during the act of creation? And if so, then men like him, like Philip K. Dick, like others who saw the Kafka and Eliot. I mean, if you read The Wasteland and you know even the barest minimum about chaos magic, right? Not that I subscribe to any of this, guys. I think
it's fascinating.
Okay.
Well, this is the beginning of a mass movement. These are the intellectuals.
Just like go watch a great half hour interview or speech by Grant Morrison, Chaos Magic. It's pretty easy to find on YouTube. He's drunk. He's Scottish. So you got to turn the subtitles on because it's like Brad Pitt trying to listen to Brad Pitt and Snatch, right? With all the pikey. It's that bad, but it's hilarious and interesting and fascinating, because when you read The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot, he encapsulated the entirety of the 20th century and into the 21st century from a zeitgeist perspective in that poem over the course of 1919 through 1923 until he finally published it, right? And then you look at what The Wasteland was talking about, and then you look at the 20th century and you're like, did T.S. Eliot create the 20th
century? It then makes
did he think, presage it or did he create it?
It then
or
makes
is you, that or is that or is that the, or either of those the wrong questions?
So I was thinking about this the other day, actually, when I was moving in here, because I was losing my mind. I was actually thinking about chaos theory as I was just dehydrated. I was sick and I was just hallucinating. And I started thinking, is that what QAnon is?
Yes.
Did somebody
QAnon
create
is a standalone complex?
No, did somebody
all these things I'm describing are basically standalone complexes.
But did somebody create QAnon not because there is a plan to save and arrest everyone, but did they set it out there so that enough people believed it that then it becomes true?
Exactly.
Did somebody on the inside really see like the elite practicing chaos magic?
Here's what it's
dude,
like.
Dude,
if
you don't read, go watch Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. Go watch the first season of that. And it will blow your fucking mind when you really start to think about this. When you see if you ever look around the internet and you see the Laughing Man, that's what the symbol of the Laughing Man shows up all over hacker culture, shows up all over dissident culture. It's everywhere. That show is fucking brilliant.
It talks about all
of these ideas that we're just talking about now, which is the idea of the self-propagating meme, the copycat without an original.
Yeah.
That's what a standalone complex is.
Okay.
Right? Is there no original Q? Probably not. What is Q? We are all Q if we believe in Q.
Sure.
And to the extent that any of us believe in it, that it is just the upswelling of our desire to make things
better.
For
there to be Q. Right.
That then creates the zeitgeist that
there was a famous
that creates the energy that changes the world.
And then in 50 years, they'll look back and say, oh, they were disseminating Q. And it's like, no, it was created out of
nothing. It was created out of our desire and our unconscious desire
for the world to be better.
Our thirst for something better.
It's also a
brilliantly said, Tom.
There was a bank run, a famous bank run where there was a bank at a bus stop in front of the bank, and the bus broke down and it was late. And so the crowd started building up and it turned into a bank run.
Right.
because people saw the crowd building up in front of the bank.
Right.
You know, I feel like you're quoting Jim again, talking about a bus. You know, Jim goes on and on about buses and minorities and bank robberies. I just don't condone it. I just don't. But, you know, I sit in front of the flag.
I'm going to kill you.
So I'm for free speech because I sit in front of the flag. But I think Jim's views on minorities are frankly gross. But, you know.
You missed your calling. You should have been in politics.
We should.
This is what they do to each other all the time.
They just lie.
They just lie their ass.
All I have to say, Tommy, is that that's been fucking brilliant, dude. Like, those are callback jokes that are just crushing it. And this is like podcasting stand up 101. Like,
so those listening, by the way, Jim didn't say any of these.
No. He's the most upstanding citizen. He's the most loving guy.
Riffing on him. So yeah. I wouldn't mention the sex with the goats, but otherwise he's just an upstanding guy.
We already had off camera,
but someone can tune in later to this and not realize we're just ripping.
That's a good point. They're gonna be like, we see a headline tomorrow, like,
yeah, I dialed
famed blogger James Kunstler. You can see Kanye's gonna tweet solidarity.
They're not gonna know
Jim.
It came from the previous foursome podcast we did.
So the worst part about all this is that if we wake up tomorrow, just to put the whole bow on the chaos magic thing,
and Jim there's just a riot outside of his house.
If we wake up tomorrow,
Jim's career is destroyed. You just destroyed him by putting the idea out.
Kanye's gonna tweet out. He's gonna be like, "This is one Jew I like." He sees it how it is. We're gonna be like, "Jesus fuck!"
Oh no!
I think this is what someone like Musk is actually good at. I think Musk puts out ideas
absolutely
to make them become true.
I mean, it's on chaos theory, right? The background, his Twitter panel is us terraforming Mars. I mean, if he's got 100 million followers, maybe that is chaos that you put into enough subconscious, which was why propaganda would be so important, which is why controlling the narrative is so important, which is, so this is actually almost like a wizarding battle of him buying Twitter.
We are fighting this. In the almost six years I've been doing this now. When I look back on the number of things that I've seeded into the zeitgeist, and again, I'm not like busting my hand, patting myself on the back, right?
No, sure.
Is that if you speak truth and you say it in such a way that it affects people, it propagates. And then it comes back to me. And then I have these things come back to me later on. And I'm like, oh, you don't say.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, right? It is.
And everywhere I look now, you know, I see someone else with another meme become ungovernable. And I see it everywhere.
Yeah.
It's every fucking where. And it all came from me and my Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me one time I was talking to a friend of mine who bought $60 million worth of GLD and then tried to get gold for it.
Right.
And he actually hired lawyers to try to get gold. Now, if you look at the prospectus, he was never promised he could get gold for it. So he was actually trying to do something that wasn't in the prospectus, but he couldn't get it, of course. I told a friend, might have been someone like Grant Williams maybe or something. Mm-hmm. And then I watched that story spread around the entire gold world.
Yep.
And then I got back to this friend of mine and said, I got to check the facts because I just watched that story spread. And I didn't name you, but I watched the story spread. And he said, oh, yeah, I wrote about it in 2006 or 8 or whatever the date was. And he said, yeah, I wrote about that. But it never caught fire.
Right.
It never got the oxygen it needed to run. And then when it got into the right pair of lips, it just took off. Yep. And so note to self, you know, these stories sometimes have one source that's not credible. Now, my source is credible. But the gold world had no idea that my source was credible, and it funneled through me. And as a consequence, that's the bank run right there. That's the spontaneous development of something big from a little tiny seed crystal.
Yep. So you can kind of see the importance of optimism and not being blackpilled, because you're creating reality.
You can help create. You can create the reality.
So
Yes. And
my brother and I talk about this. We talk about this a lot, whether obsessing over this shit is just bad, just a bad idea.
I don't know. You know, it's,
I don't
it's,
either.
I just know that at the position that I'm in now, I've had all these people and curated all these people, and they, you know, they support me monetarily, which is phenomenal and wonderful. And they support, and they also support me emotionally and, you know, with information as well. I mean, so I have this, like this community, I now feel an obligation to them. I can't stop now even if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Because, right. and not that I want to, I've never had more fun and I've never been more edified and more fulfilled in the work that I've done in my entire life.
Yeah.
That I'm doing right now. And even when we have a, you know, even when we rag on Jim Kunstler and for lovingly, because Jim is a wonderful human being.
Yeah.
Who just happens to like, you know,
who just
children,
happens
but,
to believe in racial, who just happens to believe in racial hierarchies that I don't, but again, he's his own man. He's his own man. He's our friend.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. But you know, just to make it, like, we don't have an option. I don't have an obligation to stop. You don't start something like this,
yeah,
and then, you know, and then just walk away because.
Well,
you
see,
know.
I could walk away knowing you're on the job.
Fair enough.
I said that to Mike
Krieger. When Mike Krieger finally quit Liberty Blitzkrieg, you know, Mike used to write Liberty
Blitzkrieg. I know Mike well.
Yeah. And when Mike announced that he was shutting it down because he was going to go, you know, raise tomatoes in Idaho or whatever, I said, Mike, you did yeoman's work the entire time that I was checked out and couldn't do this work. So, you know, good on you. And, you know, and Godspeed.
So the problem I face is I can bust my ass writing an absolutely front edge paper in chemistry and get 3,000 clicks, or do a podcast with Pomp and get 250,000.
Right.
And I'm going, Jesus, that was a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
I got into medical school, man. And then I've been doing this podcast. Work smarter, not harder.
Right.
I'm learning to work
smarter. I'm also 67. So one could argue that I'm transitioning.
Yes.
I'm very
but
positive.
I also do worry
all,
that I'm.
Hey, look, Dave. At the end of the day, we all don't have to do the same thing our entire lives.
Oh, that I know.
Yeah,
I mean,
I literally started this 3 years ago.
Within chemistry, I switched fields several times. But right. But here's what I said: I was in New Orleans Investment Conference. Mm-hmm. I was talking to people. I said, if you had said 20 years ago, I'd be doing 4 independent gigs at the New Orleans Investment Conference, I would have said there is no mechanism for me to get from here to there.
To there.
It would be like if someone said, 20 years from now, you'll be president of the United States. They go, not going to happen.
Nope.
There's no, a wormhole couldn't get me there. Right.
Right.
And yet somehow I got there and it baffles me at times.
You have to focus on the end goal and where you're going to. If you focus on the mechanism, you'll never get there. If you focus,
but I
on
love the path though. You got to enjoy
it's
the
brilliant.
Path.
Well, that's
no,
like
you got to enjoy every minute. You got to enjoy the ride every minute of
it's,
it.
It's one of the most delicious parts of life. Is like, how the fuck did you get here?
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. But if you try to focus on how it will happen, it will never happen. If you just focus on what it is you want to happen, it will occur and it will melt your brain in how it happens.
You know, it's funny. I've always said the same thing, which is that if you do good work, eventually it'll be recognized.
Yeah.
If you speak truth, it'll be recognized. If you're interesting, if you're different from other people, you can't, what's the secret to any entrepreneurial success? Hit them where they ain't, baby. Go where the other guy isn't. Right. Yeah. It's Robert Frost.
Well,
in the
true believer,
it's the unique selling proposition and whatever that happens to be. And if it's for me, you know, it's, you know, being vulgar and talking about goats. Well, then it's being vulgar and talking about goats. Right. But
so in the
I mean,
true
even
believer,
when I first started this thing, I thought I had a much different conception of what we were going to do, what
right.
I was doing.
Right.
And now
it's
I'm
sort of like the crypto boys, right? The guys who Bitcoin, they thought it was going to be a currency.
Right.
Right.
And now it's
in the true believer, he has a line in there where he says leaders figure out where people are going and they lead them there.
Yep.
Ah, that's good.
Yep.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a clever line. That is, yeah, a clever
is. Line. That is very clever. It is a brilliant line. Yeah.
And so the last thing I want to point out.
I can't hang up until he turns record off because I'm not getting any of these sex with ghosts jokes against me.
Right. So now you guys. So now it's the late stage.
Now we're blackmailed by Tommy. I want to set a.
We all have guns on each other now.
Thomas, yeah, that's right. And someone going, wah, wah, wah.
We all have Mexican guns pointed at each other's head. Away.
Well, you got control of the button. You got control of the button.
So I'm just going to leave with, I keep bringing this quote up over and over again just to kind of put a bow on the conversation, which is my spiritual guru, Philip K. Dick, said the most profound thing you will ever hear. I don't care what anybody has to say, which is that reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away.
It's still true, right?
Doesn't go away.
Right. No, that's a famous quote, and that's true.
And unless, it gets of more course, profound you're an MK Ultra. Right. It gets more profound by the day.
Right. Yeah.
You know, yeah. and it's everything we've said before. You know, it's everything we've said in this podcast tonight. And y'all are the best, man. I enjoy this. Like,
this is a fucking blast.
Business. And
Voltaire said, a pithy phrase is not wisdom. And I'm going, oh, that just twisted my brain into a ball. A pithy
phrase is not wisdom. That's great.
And I'm going, oh, my irony filter just blew a gasket.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do with that? How about?
I know. Okay. I know.
Maybe
see, I love quotes. I love quotes because someone else did all the heavy lifting. They're usually very meme-like quality.
Yep. You know, and I'll end with a quote by the great Jim Kunstler. And it's, even with the unparalleled efficiency and determination of the Germans, they could have never made 6 million.
You're a punk. You are such a punk. Says the Jew.
It's not mine. It's from him. He's Jewish. I'm an Irish Catholic. I had nothing to do with this.
But, God. I'm not going. There are conspiracy theories that I don't touch.
I know. For the fucking record, so I don't get removed from even BitChute, that was a joke.
Someone sent me an email one day, said, if you read this guy's shit, I swear he'll convince you the world's flat. My first thought is, well, it'd be interesting to see how he makes the case. Then I go, there's no upside to that one. I'm either A, wasting my time, or going to destroy my life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. When people email me, they're like, I'm just saying you should look into like the real history of Auschwitz. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, it's like someone sending you say you should see pictures of these children the pedophiles are doing shit to, and you go, no,
really, no.
Have you seen this video of CP? You're like, fuck off, FBI.
Yeah,
you
fuck right off. By the way, about 3 weeks ago, my wife got hit by a scammer, and she calls me, says our bank accounts are being emptied as I'm talking, and I'm on the phone with a guy from Apple, and I go, no, you're not. Hang up.
Hang up.
The first thing I did is I hit all the banks to make sure there was nothing going on. There's nothing. I shut them down. And I got home, and the guy was on the phone.
Yeah.
And he's got a hold of a website, and he's talking to her, and he says, okay, here's the data scroll. And I'm going, it's just a website. The guy's scamming you. So I take the phone. I said, look, if you're legit, you'll understand why. I asked my wife a few questions. I said, where did you get his number? She said, well, I gave it to me. And how many times have I told you don't do this? And then I said, okay, I'm going to give you one crack at convincing me you're not a sleazy fuck scammer. He said, I'm just trying to help your wife. I said, that's not it. And then he says, well, you're insulting me. I go, that definitely is not it. Because if you're a real IT guy, you wouldn't say that because you'd understand what kind of chaos you're creating at this end.
Yeah.
And then after we hung up, about 20 minutes later, he called her back because he's the shtick is, he'll go away. I'll call her. I'll get her right back on the hook. And we'll be back in the saddle.
Yep.
And then you trace.
And I'm going, fuck. Bullet in the head. Find that guy. Bullet in the head.
Didn't you trace that phone number back to
Jim Malaysia or
something?
Jim
Kunstler.
Jim Kunstler. I don't know why
I have been attacking him so much. I love Jim so much. It's just.
Because
he's not here.
He's not here.
It's leaving the party too early. leaving the party too early.
And the joke is good. That's why.
That's what you get. This is the equivalent of falling asleep early. We drew on it with Sharpies. This is what you get.
That's right.
All right, gentlemen. Yeah, let's wrap this one up.
Turn off that record. Turn it off.
I will. I'll end it. Don't worry. I'll send this episode to you guys. I love you both. Jim,
when's it go up? When's it go up?
Wherever you are.
When's it go up?
It'll go up tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you, Tommy.
I'll email to y'all. Guys, take care.